Blog Talk Radio. Yes, sir. That's Quincy Jones. Quincy Jones, this is Friday, August. Oh, my gosh, I keep making these mistakes.
We have run right over August.
This is September the 6th, 2013. My grandmother's birthday, if she was alive.
Aw. Well, happy birthday, Grandma.
Okay. Nanny, this is your birthday. And let's see, Sunday is Janine, my oldest daughter's birthday. And I had to forget that Monday was the date my mother died. So, I mean, they all fall together this September.
Yeah, yeah, my family was like that, too. I had my grandparents, both parents, and myself were all within a two-week period of August.
Is that right?
Mm. Yeah. Then we had my one brother. He was in February, so I used to call him adopted.
Yeah.
Like, how'd you miss out on the Leo
action?
Well,
there could be a lot of adoptions down here in Mississippi, so we don't know. Yeah.
Well, you know, we're all family, so it's all okay.
Yes, sir. This is the last word with Michael Lawson and Thomas Fortenberry. So you spoke to Michael,
Zitka. So I was down
there.
What's his name? Zitka.
How you spell it? I mean, oh, yeah.
Zitkow.
Zitkow.
So here's the deal.
Zitkow?
I want to get Michael on here because I was down at the library because, hey, I like books. But
this library over here?
Yeah.
University. Yeah.
So they happen to have started early voting, which is pretty cool.
Oh, it's almost over.
So I was like, oh, yeah, good, cool. And he was there. So I ran into him, started talking to him. He was giving me his little
spiel. You got to get 5,000 votes, 5,000 petitions, people on petitions.
And then,
did he get
it? Though. I said, yeah, he's still getting the signatures right now. So he was out there, anybody talking, meeting and greeting people, doing all this stuff. And then I was like, hey, you know, you got to drop by our show, and you can get your viewpoints out. And Oh, gosh. The last word. You know, and he answered, he went, oh, Mike Lawson. Oh, I know him. I met him the other day, and we talked about
him. Yeah, I spoke to him.
So, anyway.
I called him. Didn't you return my call this week?
Well, we'll give
I
him
had
a
spot.
Call. Give an email. And
I called him on his phone.
Get him on here. We'll get him on here.
Because you see the stuff is laying right here on the desk, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the stuff is right here, right?
Right here.
The card, everything. Yeah. I called him. Got no answer.
Well, we'll get Michael on it. We're all about giving people
that's correct, the mundo.
Access. That's what this is about.
Getting back to the GOP and their flip flops. They
got the biggest pair of flip flops I've ever seen.
Oh God.
They're like wandering around out on the beach.
50 years since the Martin Luther King and the celebration of the March of Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Estimated 250,000 or more people was there, not including people watching on TV.
Apparently,
and
everyone was there
except
the GOP.
The GOP.
What the heck?
The latest march. And
here's the thing. They didn't have to show up at the local Baptist church
no.
Sunday and sit there and schmooze and try to pretend that they cared or anything. This was a gimme.
The gimme!
It was the 50th anniversary. They had every television station in the entire universe there. Broadcast live. All they had to do was appear in the background.
Well, look,
they would have gotten a pass.
Let me you hear what they said.
Grievance mongering does the cause of civil rights no good whatsoever. Period.
All we heard was, here are the problems, stop and frisk. Here are the problems,
Trayvon
Martin.
Multiple references made to Trayvon Martin.
It's a near crime what is being done here to take the occasion of this man's great address and what he stood for and basically hijack it for President Barack Obama. If I were President Obama, I'd be a little embarrassed I can't stand on my own.
It's a good thing you're not President Obama. Not President Limbaugh, Fat Limbaugh either. I mean, but these people and Bill O'Reilly and Rush Limbaugh talk so bad. Oh, and then they said they never would invite it. That's Rush Limbaugh was talking.
They weren't invited.
No one invited. Never got an invitation.
Democrats were trying to make them look
bad. Then he said,
we got an
invitation never got an invitation to speak. He said, oh, yeah, they had all those liberal Democrats up there speaking. All those liberal Democrats.
All those evil.
And,
but the poor Republicans.
The poor Republicans.
See, that was a, they were going to show up, but they didn't get.
No one was invited. And Limbaugh told that to what's her name? What's the guy, Democrat strategist, the tall guy with the accent? I can't remember his name.
Carville.
Carville. He told Carville.
Come on,
no one was invited. Okay, but you know what? That's an outright lie. Every Republican leader and non-leader was invited. And do you know what happened that Bill O'Reilly had to do? Do you know old Bill O'Reilly? Bill,
the mouthpiece of Fox. That one?
Is that Bill? What do you call it? The Fluffer? Fluffer? What is that?
The Falafel?
Falafel? Bill O'Reilly, the Falafel? You know what he had to do? Apologize.
What?
On television.
You're kidding.
He apologized. I mean, everybody
Bill,
needs
I
to record this. You need to go on YouTube and get it.
Okay.
And, but we got it. But we got
last night during my discussion with James Carville about the Martin Luther King commemoration, I said there were no Republican speakers invited. Wrong. It was wrong. Some Republicans were asked to speak. They declined. And that was a mistake. They should have spoken. Now, the mistake, entirely on me. I simply assumed that since all the speakers were liberal Democrats, Republicans were excluded. So here's the tip of the day. Always check out the facts before you make a definitive statement. And when you make a mistake, admit it. By the way, I'm sorry I made that mistake. It's very annoying because I know you guys watch The Factor for accuracy.
We watch it for accuracy. We watch it for the funnies.
Yes.
These guys are so innate.
What,
they are.
What,
now, what else can he say?
Like, what I love about it is when they didn't show up and everybody just went, you bunch of raven racists. What's wrong with you? So then they went, no, wait, it isn't our fault.
It's our fault.
They can't just stand up and say, yeah, that's right.
That's right.
I proudly wear a sheet at home. You know, no, they have to go and say, I wasn't invited. I didn't get a personal invitation from the King family. You know, so they pulled that little stunt out. And then, of course, because they live in the modern era, every once in a while, fact checking, that little thing. So then every bit of news and online TV, everything else, pulled out all of the invitations. Everybody was contacted. Everybody turned it down, you know. And then they even did that. What the segment I loved was that Lost and Found segment they ran, where they tracked them all down, getting they were at super fundraisers and corporate events all over the country, you know. Well, then they had to come back and go, oh, yeah. And so that's where you get, I can't believe he actually apologized. So that's the first time.
I'll give
him a tip of the hat. That's the first time I've seen him be honest and step
and,
up.
And you know,
for being a lion. I really appreciate it. I mean, that was amazing.
This fits right in with this fool Republican Party.
If you read an order that Santiago wasn't to be punched, your order is always followed. And why would Santiago be in danger? Why would it be necessary to transfer him off the base? Santiago was a substandard Marine.
He's being transferred.
Not what you said. You said he was being transferred because he was in great danger.
That's correct.
You said he was in danger. I said great danger. You said he was in danger.
I recall what I said.
I heard the court reporter was asking.
I know what I said. I don't have to have it read back to me like I'm asking
for orders.
Colonel?
Sometimes men take matters into their own hands.
You never take matters in your own hands. Your men follow orders and people die.
So Santiago shouldn't have been in any danger at all. Shouldn't have come.
It's not you, bastard.
You know, I'd like to ask for a recess. I'd like to answer the question, Judge.
The court will wait for an answer.
If Lieutenant General gave an order that Santiago wasn't to be touched, why did he have to be transferred? Colonel, Lieutenant General reported the code red for you because that's what you told Lieutenant General to do.
Oh, yeah, what do you want from that?
You don't have to answer that question.
I'll answer the question.
You bastards. I think I'm entitled. You want me? I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
You can't handle the truth. Is this where you go, hey, we want some answers.
Yep.
They could not handle the truth. But Bill O'Reilly stepped up. This is the first time.
Hey, congratulations, Bill.
Welcome
to honesty.
Honesty.
If you could imagine a world where all the Fox Newsers went and told the truth, reported back.
And nothing but the truth?
And then if they made an error, they
come back,
came back and corrected it on air. Oh, my gosh. It would be as if they were a news organization. Like,
no, wait a minute. Are you saying that they are a news organization or
they are not. They are an entertainment organization. That's what their affidavit in court. That's how they defended themselves back during the you remember during the last election in the
budget, that's right.
When they got taken to court for false reporting. And then they said, we're not news.
That's right.
That's the way they got out of
that's it. We're not news. We are entertainment.
They're entertainment. So, but they could become news if they started telling the truth. That'd be fantastic.
Well, so then why do we have people watching Fox News? I should say it should just be Fox Entertainment. It should say Fox News.
It's one of their, you know, the Fox family of entertainment channels. That's one of their channels. But it's kind of like, I mean, in its way, it's kind
in its
of
way,
like the Comedy Central. You,
you
know,
think? Comedy Central?
The little news that they have going on there, except that it's far less intelligent. The Comedy Central ones are just, you know, they are hysterical. They're profound.
Well,
John Stewart.
let me let you hear what Rush Limbaugh said about this.
The Republican Party's hanging by a thread. They're either embarrassed at the base or they don't like the base. The pro-life, the caricature, pro-life, the gun-toting, shotgun-shooting, tobacco-spitting crowd. That wouldn't be embarrassed, wouldn't be bothered at all if that group of people said, oh, would you? We're leaving, man. And even if it meant losing a couple of elections, but the Republicans can't afford any defections because they don't have any people going to make up the slack.
And his up.
The Republicans keep throwing away aspects of their core beliefs under this silly belief that that's how we'll get things done. We'll finally get to what matters. We'll get this tax business off the table, and now we can focus on spending. We're running out of core beliefs to throw away, folks. Obama's victory here has been massive, profound, sweeping, unbelievably large.
Unbelievably large. And he wished his was large, but it's not. It's teeny, teeny, teeny. That so, but the GOP now. They are so crazy. Republicans haven't been truly competitive for the African American vote since Richard Nixon got a third of it in 1960 against JFK. They haven't been competitive at all.
I mean, and this is even with the pizza delivery guy. They have
right.
not been competitive at all.
But here's the thing.
At least in the, even all through the 80s and into the 90s with Clinton, you know, they tried to appear competitive, at least a try. Now, they do not care. They don't even try. That's the thing.
Since the Reagan era was over. And it's been over 100 years ago. People think Reagan is still living, and he's living on his ranch in Santa Barbara. He ain't there no more. He's under Santa Barbara.
They're hoping that he'll be living on Mount Rushmore.
I mean, give me a break. They have been, no more had they been careful in what they're saying. They're blatantly spurning the support of the African Americans, mainly because an image of racial tolerance at least was deemed essential in gaining support for the white vote and independence and the soccer moms. However, Ken, what's his name, Melman, in 2006 speech to the NAACP repudiating the GOP's 60-era Southern strategy wasn't designed too seriously to challenge the Democrats' lock on black votes, but to give moderates and maybe even Latinos a reason to hope the party was evolving on race. And now they are throwing it under the bus, not just riding over it, but backing up over it.
Yes.
And three or four times.
One might say they not just dragging the people off the bus, but, you know, they're just going ahead. And, you know.
Well, the thing is that they know they will never, ever, ever get the black vote. I mean, Obama got 94% of the black vote, and that was 6%. They must have been.
They didn't vote. They were too sick to show up that day. Now look, here's the thing. They could be competitive because guess what? We've only got two parties in this country. So they could be competitive if they would even try. Because you know what? I know tons of conservative, you know, people. I know half the people that we know in our party, churchgoers and all this kind of stuff, they have real issues with, you know, homosexuality, the religion versus non-religion, secularism in America, things like that. So they have ground to build on with people. But they have to go.
They have to go.
They
have to go there. They have to go there. Right.
Off into the abyss of racism and stuff. That now they're not even they can't even.
They don't even care.
And this, I blame. You know, you want to talk about the myth of Reagan? Let's blame Reagan because Reagan was blatant enough. Now here's how Reagan got away with things. Reagan was an actor. And he got to, you know,
he was?
Mr. Cowboy.
I thought the chimpanzee acted better than him.
But here's the thing. He always was like, oh, I'm granddad. I'm nice. I'm sweet. I didn't do anything. You know, that was the act. But the thing that people forget is he started and founded his presidency standing atop, you know, one of the worst crimes ever in civil rights history in Mississippi. You know, he's standing right up there on the dam going, I'm running for president.
Yep.
Why in the world is a California governor and a modern Republican or any party person, why would they fly across country to the depths of the South, go out into the countryside, to the smallest dirt town in the world, and then go stand on top of something because they were – you know, just like when they try to pass things like, it's not Martin Luther King Day, it's actually, you know, Redneck, the South will rise again day. You know how they try to do these things. Let's put it, you know, it's also the president of the Confederacy.
Right.
Well, he was doing that doublespeak where his grandpa comes to announce his presidency, and yet I'm going to stand on top of the mound of the dead and sit here and just like, you know, put my foot up on someone's skull. And then wink at the whitey. You know, that is what's infuriating to me. But it's become blatant. You know, he got elected, happily so, doing that.
Yeah.
And they just flaunt it.
So he was grandpa.
But here's the thing. He got away with it because he was the nice old grandpa. But nowadays, you know, they don't have a nice old grandpa. And they've gotten, unfortunately, because they made that deal with the devil back in the 80s to return to power because they were out ever since, you know, Nixon. They made that deal with the devil to bring in all the extremists possible under their, you know, that was their big tent. That's what they were meaning, you know, a big white tent that was pointy on top. And they brought in all these extremists. So now that's all they've got.
Yep.
And we're that's why, you know, everyone, you see the Latinos, the blacks, you know, anybody with a brain, anybody that has a degree, you know, anything, any kind of excuse that is near modernity or a civilized society has fled the party. And that's why they're left with, you know, that's the hate mongers and freaks.
Well,
which is why, look at their candidates they've had. I mean, the last viable candidate, and this is a person that I think is one of the most destructive, you know, horrible, you know, warlord type guys in the universe. But that said, their last politician and statesman was Herbert Walker Bush.
Yeah.
You know, he was an actual politician.
Yeah, because he worked up from the bottom.
He understood international policy. He understood how
the CIA worked.
Still had to work. He knew all of these things. But nowadays, they it's like a circus act. It's always, I mean, look at their choices of late. It's things that, you know, let's have a contest between, you know, Palin and what was it, Michelle Bachmann. Let's have, you know, a pizza guy that's not even pretending to be a candidate, and let's go against, you know, it's like a, literally like a circus act.
Well, you're absolutely correct. It's just like a circus act.
But it's not serious. You can't. It's hard to take seriously. And they're going to be out of politics forever if they keep down this path. I mean, we're not going to have anybody run against. It's going to get kind of embarrassing.
Well, the thing is that, that reminds me, there are a bunch of really rodeo clowns. What it was. When Reagan was here, it was a three-ring circus. And he just put on a face like a clown and made everybody happy. But under that, he was sending troops into Nicaragua. He was selling guns against our own laws here. He was doing all this stuff. Everybody else went to jail. Me, yeah. I do nothing. You know, I'm senile.
Yeah, that's why he pulled out the I've got Alzheimer's. Don't put me in prison.
Don't put me in prison.
But, I mean, and again, they threw out, you know, Ollie North under the bus.
Yeah.
It was such a blatant.
Absolutely.
Somebody had to go to jail. But then Ollie said, no, I did it all. You know, but he was.
Yeah.
He was,
oh, yeah. And then he gave a pardon. But he gave a pardon to the National Security Advisor, Admiral Poindexter.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Because, hey. Hey, no admiral going to go to prison for
it. Hey, no.
Hey, fix this.
But now,
here's the thing.
Yes.
Imagine, I don't know, a Kenyan terrorist.
Oh, Kenyan terrorist.
That was secreted into the United States.
That's bad, isn't it?
Through shenanigans.
That's bad.
He got infiltrated into the White House. Imagine this scenario. Imagine he goes and meets those Islamo-fascist terrorists in Iran secretly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he starts buying drugs. Out of Central America. And buying weapons. Iranian. So that he can illegally, against direct law, go and destabilize and invade countries like, you know, Nicaragua and Panama, El Salvador. And in the course of doing so, they start shooting nuns, killing people that are reporting on them.
Shooting nuns.
I mean, literally, just like anybody that's going to the press that even starts to tell about it, they killed them, right? Now,
that story, a movie about that.
Imagine Obama doing that. Would there be outrage?
Outrage? Impeach him!
How
can you impeach
him? That's why you stand him up against the wall, because he'd be working with the Iranians to buy and sell drugs and guns with the Colombians so that they could destabilize them.
But I want to know. Here's one thing I want to know. Here's one thing I want to know.
But that's what Reagan did.
How can you impeach somebody that never was legally the president?
You're right. That's his defense. Can't get rid of him because he's not actually.
That's right.
He's not really voted in.
And you can't impeach somebody that's not an American.
Right. So, you know what?
How's that possible?
This is the worst nightmare scenario. You can't impeach him.
That's right.
He's not a real citizen.
That's right.
Nancy wasn't really elected.
That's right.
It's all illegal. Yet he's there, but since it's all illegal, the amendment limiting him to 4 years twice doesn't apply.
That's correct. He can run again.
Forever.
If the people want him, he could be there forever.
And he could just squat there and say, hey, no laws apply.
You
Where
know,
is my birth certificate?
I never thought of that.
And
you're absolutely correct.
After that is comma.
Now, the thing is, though, if the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court swore him in, that means the Chief Justice is guilty, too, because
well,
he conspired to get this done.
And the, what the out there was, he even double conspired.
Yes, because he did it twice.
Loved the
right,
one.
Then he had to redo
it
again.
But they did it in private secret.
That's correct. So we don't know whatever took place.
It's an elaborate conspiracy because they probably
all
are Masons. That's what I mean. Now, it may be that they themselves are the Masonic conspiracy. I personally believe they're actually working for their overlords, who are the Greys from
Alabama. You know?
See, we've solved it all.
I heard you from Coast to Coast the other night.
Yeah. Well, you know, you said rodeo clowns.
Rodeo clowns.
Yeah.
Let's see who we have on the air.
This is the way the GOP thinks. This is literally a little light into their dark cavern.
That's right, because if he's Kenyan, he never could be sworn in as president. That means he never was president. Therefore, you can't impeach somebody who never was president. You can't impeach someone who's a foreigner.
Which is why I love that meme on Facebook going around right now. It's just got Bill. Says, miss me yet?
Yeah.
Just the good old days when we could impeach you guys.
The good old days.
You know.
Let's see what we got on the phone here. Hello, who's this?
Hey, Michael, this is Robbie Wells.
Robbie, how are you doing?
Man, I am doing just fine. I hope you guys are doing well this afternoon.
Yeah, well, we were just talking about that. If the president went and bombed Syria, and the Republicans trying to impeach him, how could they impeach somebody who's a Kenyan, therefore he never was a citizen, therefore he never actually became president, and that means the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court also is guilty of an illegal act because he did it three times. Because the first time he flubbed it, the second time he had to do it in private, and the third time he did it when he got elected again. So how does this make sense to me?
You know,
I mean,
it makes it makes absolutely no sense. Let me tell you this right now. What I find completely funny is the simple fact that we've got Congress right now wanting to pass a resolution that basically gives the power to the president that he already has anyway with the War Powers Act. They're saying they want to give him 60 days and another 30 maybe. So, you know, that's basically what he has anyway. So, I mean, what are they really doing up there?
Listen, let me read you this. The War Powers Resolution requires the president to notify Congress within 48 hours of committing armed forces to military action and forbids armed forces from remaining more than 60 days with a further 30 days withdrawal period without authorization of use of military force or a declaration of war. So, I mean, what are these people talking about here? Reagan did it. Reagan started. He did it. As a matter of fact, Truman did it when he sent troops into Korea. Then Reagan did it. Then first Bush Senior did it. Then Clinton did it. Kennedy and Nixon. That was never actually an actual war either. So Kennedy and Johnson and Nixon did it. They never asked for a declaration of war for the Congress. So,
well,
what do you think, Mr. President, if you became president?
Well, first of all, let me go through a couple of things that I've got a problem with. Number one, John Kerry, in the hearings earlier this week, he said that the Arab nations would actually be funding this operation that we are actually going to go over with our military forces. So here's the thing. Does that mean now that that our young men and women are considered to be mercenaries because we're getting paid by another country to go do their dirty work, number one. Number two, you got to look at who exactly we are going to be aiding, okay? The rebels that are fighting against the Syrian regime is Al-Qaeda. Now, if you look at CNN's report just about 4 days ago, they put out a report that Taliban insurgents from Pakistan have now traveled to Syria to team up with Al-Qaeda to fight against the Syrian regime. So here's the thing. For the past 12 years, the Taliban and Al-Qaeda has been our enemy. Now, all of a sudden, we want to give weapons or we want to aid who has been our enemy, the people that want to kill us. That's why I think, you know, we can just sit back here. If we've got a problem with the regime, let them go against our enemy. They're going to end up killing each other.
Well, you know, and I agree with you in part, but there are 12 now, if you listen to... and I'll play that a little bit later, Secretary Kerry said, there are 12 different individual organizations fighting over there. He said, now, you got this Christians, you got the Muslims, you got Al-Qaeda, you got all these other groups. The ones who want us to come in are the Arab group, the Muslims. And they're the ones that we will like to arm. Now, the Christians also do not like... with the Bashari, they don't like him either. But they're afraid that if we give guns to the Arabs will use them on the Christians. So the dilemma now is, latest news I just saw about an hour ago was that Saudi Arabia is coming on our side, Jordan is coming on our side, and Kuwait is coming to aid if we need troops on the ground. So I think this is going to come out in the president's speech. But your constituents, Mr. Candidate for President, if you were the president, would be what?
Well, I would absolutely sit this one out. I do not believe that we've got a dog in this fight, okay? I know there's been atrocities over in the Middle East and especially in Syria, but, you know, I think it's kind of hypocritical if you think about it. We're going to draw a red line in the dirt because they've used chemical weapons yet. In the Vietnam War, we used Agent Orange. We've used chemical weapons ourselves against the enemy.
But that wasn't a war.
Okay, well, you're exactly right. You know, it was not a constitutional war. Vietnam was not. So there you go.
And you know, here's the other thing: if that wasn't a war, and it lasted what 9 years, 10 years,
right?
Isn't that more than 60 days? Oh, you know what? We didn't have the War Powers Act until 1973. So I guess this is a result. Vietnam is a result. Of the War Powers Act is a result of Vietnam.
Yeah.
So, right.
They pass every year. But see, that's what they would do, pass an act.
Well, but the thing is, then, that Bush Jr.
But here's the sad truth.
Yes.
There has been no formally declared war.
That's right.
All of them.
Well, but the Congress passed, for Bush Jr. to go in? Right, but that was not a declared war either. And actually, so...
The other one was they allowed after 9/11 they gave Bush the ability to fight back.
Right, so again, that was another action. Right. Right. So, Mr. Candidate for President, how would you deal, and you see, I have been wrestling with this after a Vietnam vet at the CRO is fighting and seeing everything that's gone on into war. I am fed up with war too. And the problem is,
fighting in time is violating all international law by using chemical weapons, a declared weapon of mass destruction. And so it is a good thing to go in limitedly and reduce escape ability. That's the excuse, you know, until we shut off our lobby and we shut off everything. And these are supposed to be the good causes of war. So is this viable or not?
Well,
how do we sit out without looking like
well, this is what I want to ask Mr. Candidate for President, Mr. Robbie Wells. With 1922, 1923, I believe it was, the law was passed against 199 countries passed this resolution that there would never ever be again a war where we use chemical weapons and cyanide and anything else. So, and all the countries signed it. Syria did not sign. They're one of the only one I think of a couple that did not sign. So we, as the United States, have taken over the role as Big Brother. No matter what anybody says, we have taken over that role. Every single country in the world has come to us to help them. Some time or another since 1922, since 1900. So, what do you say about that, Rob?
Well, Michael, here's what I have to say. We're giving away all this money in foreign aid, $50 billion a year in foreign aid, and yet we've got all these problems that I always talk about. You know, 39 million Americans living in poverty. 20 million plus that are out of work, and yes, the unemployment rate just came out. It did go down a little bit in August. It's down to 7.3 now, but we still have all these people that have given up, and that's part of the reason why the number has gone down. We've got another 25 million that are underemployed. We got basically half our population living on low income, existing right. on low income, and when you look at all that, and yet we're trying to buy our friends with all this foreign aid, I don't think it's gotten us anywhere except further and further in debt. Here we are, almost 17 trillion in debt. Maybe we need to say, if we keep on doing what we're doing, we're going to keep on getting what we're getting. It's time to go in a different direction.
Well, no, you're absolutely correct. But here's the problem that I have with what you said. Everything you said is absolutely true. But here's the problem I have. The problem is that regressive Republican Party. They hate this man, Mr. Obama, so bad, they would rather have this country fail. I mean, they have not passed one jobs bill in 5.5 years. We would not be in this condition in this country if they had passed a job bill. But they voted against Obamacare 40 times. I mean, they don't want this president to succeed in even brushing his teeth. If they could come up with a law that says he can't use Crest toothpaste, they would do that. This man has been in office 5 years, and they keep saying he has to pass the law. No, he doesn't. He doesn't give them a bill. He don't give them suggestions. If he's doing that, they might as well get rid of the Congress and have the president do everything. Be the CEO of the country. Their job is to make sure to pass bills and bring bills to this president that he can sign. They have not done that one time.
Well, agree. So but let me just say this. John McCain is actually on the president's side this time with Syria, with us going and attacking Syria. And John McCain yesterday, I don't know if you actually saw the town hall meeting where concerned citizens were basically telling him, no, we don't need to go there. Right. You know, it was the New York Times yesterday that put out the video of the rebels actually executing soldiers from the regime. I mean, yes. Here's the thing.
But that's war. But see, that's nonsense. That's war. That's what happens
that's
in
right.
war. You know, S-H-I-T happens every time you drop the first bomb. It happens. So that means nothing. That's when they showed that, that was just some major, major blowing up to show you this is what's happening. Well, listen, they should have been in show you what happened to the Jews during World War II. They should have showed you what was happening to everybody by the Kaiser in World War I. This is only blatant publicity. The problem goes back to the Republican Regressive Party by not passing a jobs bill. We have bridges that are 100 years old, 57 years old, that if you had the major traffic across it, they would fall. I mean, they
imagine,
don't want nothing.
Imagine if we were able to keep that $50 billion in foreign aid right here in this country, which is what I propose we do when I become president in 2016. We keep that $50 billion here. Now we can, and that's $50 billion a year. That's not a one-time $50 billion. But we keep that money right here, and we spread that over all the states. Think about what we can do with our infrastructure. Think about how many jobs could be created just because of that every year. So,
listen, Mr. President, let me tell you something. If you have the same nonsensical regressive party in place, it's not getting done. You're the president. You're not a congressman. You cannot pass laws. The problem is
just got to sign them into law. That's correct.
You can't do nothing. The problem is we have this man single-handedly brought the stock market from 6,000 and change up to 16,000. Now it's down to about 14,000. But he has doubled it in 5 years. Just guess what it would have been if we had 10 million people working. I mean, come on. It all stems back to this. So this is only... This is all bull about we don't want to go to war with them. Please, we don't have the money. That's a lot of crap. They can spend money overnight. What they needed to do, and they wanted, they didn't believe this man should have been president. They didn't think he should be president. They're calling him up. I mean, we got. Let me just play this. They have this this one thing where this clown. And his name is Ted Yoho. I call him Ted Yoho. Would not even admit to Chris Matthews that this man was not born in this country. They are still saying it. You got 30% of the Republicans in this country saying this man is not president. They would, that all they want is a peek in the window, and they would throw up an impeachment, even though it would not work. They would do it in a micro minute. They don't care about this country. They don't care about the soldiers. They're not giving the soldiers crap. And the problem is the president can't do nothing about it. Nothing. Because he's president, and he doesn't write the bill. And that's where we're at. We're here with this damn Syrian dilemma, which I am against and I'm for. The problem is we signed on, and we are now the big brother in the world. Despite what anybody wants to think, despite what you say, we are the only country in this world that will stand up for the little person, even though the Republicans in this country will not stand up for it. But we got Democrats that will. The problem is we signed on to this treaty that said no chemical weapons will ever be enforced. And it, for us to see 2 million people now to go and be refugees, Bill Clinton, and it's always just stuck with me, Bill Clinton said the worst mistake he ever made in his entire life was not intervening in Rwanda. And all those millions of people were killed. We could have done that, but the Congress wouldn't let him do it, and he didn't want to use all his chips in the mail because he had to go into Bosnia. Great. Yeah.
Okay. Syria, we could try to trying to degrade all of their capabilities and remove their stockpiles or whatever.
Okay.
And try it in a limited way.
Okay.
That's maybe a just cause.
Right.
But there are so many just causes. Like, why haven't we ever gone to stop the Congo civil war?
Absolutely.
They've killed literally over, 2 million now.
Right, absolutely.
There's death tolls. So why don't we do things like that? I mean, I'm just saying. So
because there's no justification, because we're not going to get anything out of it.
Okay.
There's no oil in the canteen for this.
So, Mr. Will,
yeah.
To your point, if you're not going to, you're president now, and you just say no go, we're not moving. Is there a just war, or is there a just cause to ever go to war, or are you a strict, isolationist? We will not go to war no matter what.
No, there's always. War is always an option, but I just believe, guys, that it should be our last option. We shouldn't seem so trigger happy. And I'm not saying that President Obama is, but, guys, we've been in all of these conflicts. Let's go back just to Desert Storm since 1991. Okay, you've got Desert Storm, and then because of that, right after, we've got 9/11, then we've got Afghanistan, we've got Iraq, then we've got Libya 2 summers ago. Now we're looking, and between Libya and now, we were looking at Iran, and now our attention is on Syria. So when does it stop, guys? I'm just saying that maybe, just maybe, with my plan, it's called the game plan, that we follow that plan, which would make us energy independent. In fact, we become at least 25% oil independent within my first 4 years in office, so we no longer have to rely on the Middle East. And these countries that, have had unrest for thousands of years, why do we think it's going to change just because we go over there and try to put our finger on one nation here and there, every few years? So I just think this goes back to the 50s. This goes back to the 50s when Eisenhower was president, when we basically took over for Britain there in the Middle East. So, we've just got to, in my humble opinion, guys, yes, we can go to war, but it's got to be the last option. And, I just don't think that we need to be involved in this one. I really don't.
Okay, when you say the last option, you mean the last option for us, the last option that we feel that there's been too many people killed? When you say the last option, what do you mean?
Well, is the United States in dire threat, number one? That's what the commander-in-chief's got to look at. In my humble opinion, I do not believe so in this. This is their fight. Let them have it, okay? It's a civil war. When we had our civil war, did Germany, France, the mother country, did any of them come to the aid of the United States? I don't think so. Or did any of them come to the aid of the southern states? I do not think so. It's a civil war.
France came to our aid during the Civil War.
During the Revolutionary War,
I should say. So, but
I'm talking about Civil War.
Yeah, right. Well, you see, the thing is that, everything you say is absolutely correct. The problem is that we put ourselves into this position before all of us were even a gleam in our grandfather's eye. We put ourselves in this position.
We
ascended to this position.
We
used the first major bomb that was part of this not to be ever used again. We did it.
Yeah, to make a point.
So now, and that point is what we have carried with us over all these countries. If you don't do this, remember what happened in Japan.
Yeah.
So the thing is that...
This is what happened to Reagan during the 80s. He said we were in a bankruptcy race with the Soviet Union, and they won over first. But we were both leveraging our entire economy toward massive, overwhelming military force.
Right.
And we bankrupted them first.
Right.
Laughed when they collapsed. But that was the strategy then.
Mm-hmm.
And we just had more reserves.
Right.
I mean, again, that's not a wise strategy to bankrupt yourself. But so here's to get off Syria and that war, But to stay on the topic, Mr. Wells, since you're the commander-in-chief in theory on this exercise, every single day we have new leaks, you know, in the NSA spying scandals and all the Snowden stuff, you know, constantly dribbling out. Just recently, you know, just the last day or so, they've announced that, oh, yeah, by the way, they can read all encrypted materials, and they routinely do so. So, but this is, again, you know, everybody has known this. They've been spying on us for a while. But as going in as commander-in-chief, is this one of your greatest tools of the world, that you can stop terrorism and prevent dastardly deeds against the United States by reading everybody's emails on Earth? Or is this a step too far, and would you shut it all down? What are your feelings on this NSA scandal and the ability with us, with Echelon and all, to monitor everybody all the time?
Well, I'm glad that you did add to that, because I am a Liberty candidate, and because of that, I do not think that our Fourth Amendment rights should be infringed upon, as it is being infringed upon ever since the USA Patriot Act was passed and the National Defense Authorization Act. And there's some good parts to them, but again, just like we talked about before, Michael, you've got to go back and you've got to tweak the things that are not good. And the simple fact that the eavesdropping does go on, and it can actually go on with any American, and we've seen that. What I truly believe is that we've got to have true transparency in Washington at all levels, at all three branches, because if you've got transparency, then there is no scandal or there is no cover-up, and if there's no cover-up, there's no scandal. So I'm all for restoring the liberties and the freedom back to the people of the United States. Let's determine and identify who the terrorists are, but I think that we can do that without taking away from the liberties and the freedom of the people. So that's where I sit on that, and I know that for the most part, the Democratic Party, are you there?
Yep, I'm here. Go ahead.
The Democratic Party really hasn't taken much of a stance on that. So that's probably a little bit where I'm a little bit different from some of the other people out there. There's not many in Congress that are taking a stance like I'm taking as far as the Democratic side. They're just really not taking much of any stance on it. But I'm all for returning the liberties and the freedom and securing the liberties and freedom to the people of the United States.
Well, I want to thank you, Candidate for President Bobby Wells. And, I really like what you're saying. And when you come on next, I would like you to tell us how you would take care of this regressive Republican Party that knows they only have a matter of a few years left that's viable.
Well, and I'm going to tell you this right now. The Republican Party is a divided party. And, when your house is divided, it will fall. So that's one thing where I tip my hat to the Democratic Party. There's a singleness of purpose with that Democratic Party. The Democratic Party can disagree with each other, but at the end of the day, they're going to be agreeable in their disagreements. So, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that the Democratic Party is going to agree with every policy and every philosophy and everything that I would want to do. But I will tell you this. Every decision that I make will be constitutional, and it will be for the betterment of this country when I'm elected president in 2016.
I thank you, Bobby Wells, candidate for president of these United States, and hoping to hear from you next week.
Absolutely. Yeah. We'll be glad to come back on, Michael. And let me just say to all your listeners out there, I hope everyone had a great Labor Day weekend last weekend. I hope that everyone has a great weekend this weekend. Go on our website, RobbieWells2016.com. This is $5 Friday, so if you could go on and donate to us, we'd like to have 1 million people partner up with us across the country every Friday and donate $5. And if we can do that for 2 years straight, we'll raise over $500 million, and we will be able to go compete and beat anybody and any candidate that comes up against us. So May God bless each and every one of you. May God bless these United States. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. That was Robbie Wells, who's a candidate for president of these United States. And, you know, I like what he says. You know, I just,
you know, well, I like to say, well, you know, he sometimes what he says kind of alarms me a little bit. But mostly I love that he stands up for himself. And
absolutely. Yep.
Talking.
Yep.
He doesn't mince around. He doesn't lie, cheat, and waver and all this type of stuff like so many of these politicians do. And it really bothers me. Like, I don't even mind Republicans being, you know, just nasty, money-grubbing, racist jerks. But be honest about it. I get tired of them when they always lie and sneak around and, I didn't say that. You know what I mean? I only appeared at the burning. You know? I didn't know until I was there that that was a person. It's just so pathetic. And it's just like, we weren't invited. We didn't know anything about MLK. It's a 50th anniversary.
Right.
You know?
Well,
I'm George W. Bush. That man knew how to sell war, excess of evil, 50 tons of mustard gas in a turkey farm, mobile biological weapons labs, significant quantities of uranium. The regime is seeking a nuclear bomb, the smoking gun, that could come in the form of a mushroom cloud. Oh, God, I love being lied to by a professional.
Yes, we love being lied to by a professional. Let's see who else we got on the line here. Hello? Who's this?
It's Autry.
John Autry from
yes, sir.
District 5.
Yes, sir.
Are you running? I understand. You're running for re-election.
That is correct.
And I don't know if you're able to hear the previous candidate we had on there. He's right now, he's independent candidate running for president of the United States, Robbie Wells. Did you hear any of that?
Just the last couple of sentences.
Okay. Well, anyway, what is going on in this Charlotte district? And I think whatever's going on here might be going on in a lot of places in Charlotte.
Well, we're seeing, spits and spurts of the recovery of the economy. We're dealing with a NCDOT project that is not helping the situation, really.
Which stands for what? NCDOP? What is that?
North Carolina Department of Transportation.
Okay.
I'm referring to the widening of Independence Boulevard that will turn it into an expressway.
Ah.
It's we have a concrete median running down to the center of the road right now, which is presenting some safety hazards with folks trying to cross.
Right.
Independence when there's no stop signs and no stop lights, and they're trying to dodge between cars doing 50 miles an hour or better. The businesses are losing signage, they're losing frontage space. Some of the parcels after the project is complete are going to be so shallow that there's not going to be any way for those to be really profitably redeveloped. I talked to folks in restaurants the other day who one of the East Charlotte institutions for late night eating, the Liberty East restaurant, the management there told me that their revenue was off 40%. A waitress who brought me breakfast said that her tips are down $25 a day.
Jeez.
That's a significant impact to someone in that economic strata.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, we just have to keep looking for other ways. I think that's part of
Would overpasses work? People could come from one side to the other side?
Well, they're creating three overpasses in this next phase of the project. Conference Drive, Idlewild, and Sharon Amity will go over Independence. But those are not there now. Now, we still have a stoplight at Idlewild and at Sharon Amity where there is a crosswalk. But I've seen people trying to cross Independence 50 feet from the crosswalk through traffic.
Yeah. Well, see, and that's the problem. Why wouldn't they 50 feet out of the way to be safe? Doesn't make any sense to me.
That's correct. It doesn't make any sense to anybody with a reasonable, you know, logic.
Especially at night. Yeah. Well, you know, the thing is.
Especially at night.
How is the stores along Independence between the old, not the old, the, what is that, the, not the Bojangles Arena, whatever it is down there, that overpass, that the one they have up, which is on, I just go there. I don't remember streets. But they have one over, they have one overpass that leads you across the street to the, that entertainment complex. What's it across the street there? There's two of them next to
Briar.
Oh, Briar
Creek. Briar Creek, Bojangles Auditorium, Bojangles Arena, and
there's parking on the side where Bojangles Arena is. You know, am I right?
That's correct.
So, now if you go down further towards Sharon Amity, all those, that's all empty, isn't it?
Not all of it, no. There's that Walmart there. There are a couple other businesses.
Right. That's another thing. My wife told me about it. Oh, yeah, the Walmart's over there. But, you know, I said, oh, well, wait. I was driving down Independence, and I never saw a major sign where you could cut in there to go to Walmart. Because Walmart, you don't see the sign Walmart when you're going down Independence. You have to go around. You have to turn in.
Well, it's built right there on the edge of the expressway.
Right. That's correct.
And it is lit up on the side of the building with a Walmart sign. There is a catch lane on Independence that allows traffic to get out of the main traffic flow and make that right turn in there. They can also go across the Albemarle Road interchange and get off on the Pearson Drive exit to get to the Walmart.
Right.
So there's access in there.
Only if you have GPS could you find it. I never saw a sign, and I'm being honest, driving down there, driving down Albemarle Road, I never saw the sign that said Walmart. And how I noticed it when I came across, there's an overpass. I think I went across the overpass the street up from before you get to Sharon Amity. What's that overpass?
Albemarle.
Before you get to town. No, you. Be, I mean,
Album,
you get to Albemarle,
Albemarle Road, and it's the Albemarle Road exit, and it's the Pearson Drive overpass.
Right. That's how I went, but now I know there's a exit off the Independence where you can cut right in and then make another turn and be right there at Walmart. I didn't know about that.
Correct.
I never saw that before. So I think they need to have a larger sign or a sign at least that says, hey, get off here for Walmart.
Well, if you look at the inbound lane, if you're going in towards the city, and the Eastway Drive exit, it does have an indicator that you can use that interchange to reverse your direction and get to the Walmart.
Right.
Part of the capital improvement program is to extend the road that is stubbed off there at the side of the Walmart and extend it all the way down to Eastway Drive, reconfiguring the Eastway interchange to allow people to traverse that road and hopefully be a catalyst and stimulate some redevelopment of the Coliseum Shopping Center there.
Okay, what about people who are not driving but are walking?
From where to where?
From the side, they live on the side that goes to the city, and they want to get on the side where Walmart is. How is it going to be made easier for them?
They should go down to Pearson Drive and walk underneath Independence along Pearson Drive to get to the store.
So they can do that then?
Sure.
There's a walk
there.
Okay. Okay.
There's sidewalks underneath there.
Is that easily accessible for them? Because I've never done it, so I don't know.
Yeah. Sure.
Okay, it is. Okay. So you haven't gotten many complaints about that then. What are the complaints from the people in your district about that Independence flow?
Well, that it's costing us to lose commercial and retail resources that we're used to having. course, a lot of, you know, there's over 170 businesses that have just gone away. They didn't relocate. They just closed up and went away, decided to give up the ghost. There is a lot of turmoil around getting in and out of the places where you do want to get in, because if you're in the outbound lane and you want to get to City Chevrolet, you have to go all the way down to Idlewild and make a U-turn to come back. And that's causing a lot of consternation, because there's a lot of commercial vehicles moving around that are moving through neighborhoods, which is causing some heartburn for some neighbors. Then we have the Sharon Amity interchange that is being constructed. There'll be a detour that will take motorists within 100 feet of the back of some folks' houses there in Amity Gardens community. So that's going to be a painful experience for them for the next couple of years. But, you know, we've got to look ahead to October 2016 when the project will be done, and we'll have a much more efficient way to get in and out of the city than we already do. I mean, I live near the intersection of Independence and Albemarle, and I have no issues getting out of the city. I can get in there in about 10 minutes. And, you know, NCDOT's purview is how many cars can I move from point A to point B with the least obstacles? So that's what they're concerned with, and that's what they're going to be working on, and they're doing a great job of it. But the turmoil that it's and the havoc that it's, you know, causing us here right now is problematic.
Another question I ask you, how do you remain so calm and collected when you're giving out all this horrible and good news together?
Well, I can't let the turmoil inside always come out to the surface. You know, you have, look, it's an emotional situation. I try to make, you know, to use information in an unemotional manner. Sometimes I'm not always successful, but it is important that people understand that, you know, you're not a reactionary. You're not a blowhard. You're not in this position to make speeches and to stand in front of TV cameras. You're there to better the living quality of all the citizens of Charlotte, and especially in District 5, where folks have felt like they've been slighted for some time. And it's you know, my job to make sure that their issues are addressed in a timely manner. And sometimes, as I believe you have experienced with me over the last couple of years, that sometimes you have to go back and tell people things that they didn't want to hear.
Yep.
But if you do it in the right way, they're appreciative that you went and did the research and you got the information and you brought it back to them, told them what the story was, shared with them, you know, what your own experience is, and they seem to be appreciative of that, even though they did not get the answer they wanted. And that's hard to do sometimes. So it's important to maintain a calm and steady demeanor about that.
Well, when I hear you talk, it's like talking to Dr. Kildare.
Yeah.
Dr. Kildare with a message from House.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That's right. Let me see if I can get you to raise your voice. What the hell is going on with Ethan Ball?
Ah, boy, you're not going to get a raised voice out of that. We have, you know, last year, last August, the city bought the property for $13.2 million. And combined all the parcels and put out a request for qualifications from potential partners in a public-private partnership to redevelop that property. There were originally 7 responses. Of those 7, 4 were eliminated. 3 of those responders were asked to prepare a proposal.
Mm-hmm.
One of those responders withdrew whenever they were told that there was not going to be any more city money for them to help them in their venture. So that left us with two. That left us with ARC Ventures and Studio Charlotte Development. And last month at the Economic Development Committee meeting where the project was referred to, staff recommended that we take the next 6 months and fully vet the proposal that Studio Charlotte has before us. Now, the Studio Charlotte Development has been portrayed sometimes as the last girl without a dancer partner at the dance. But we learned during that Economic Development Committee meeting that indeed staff's recommendation was going to be to further explore the possibility of working with Studio Charlotte Development. Before that meeting actually occurred, though, ARC Ventures withdrew, citing not wanting to be part of a political battle, which, frankly, I didn't see any kind of political battle. I saw the city moving forward with some objectives and goals about redeveloping that property. So here we are. Now we have Studio Charlotte.
What did ARC want to do? What did they want to do with the property, ARC?
They were proposing a amusement, extreme sports sort of indoor ski slope entertainment complex, not with live music or anything like that, but, you know, a skateboard park, a water feature, and an indoor ski slope.
I'm glad they left.
Maybe they could have had a
hard time.
Let me say this about ARC has been very successful here in Charlotte with the North Carolina Music Factory, and I absolutely applaud them for that effort over there. And I'm not a member of the Economic Development Committee, but in looking at the proposal, they didn't want to own the property. They wanted to lease the property for a long-term lease, which meant that they would not be paying property taxes on that property. One of the objectives that the city has for that property is to return it to the tax rolls.
Right.
That's how the city is really going to recoup its investment in purchasing that property.
Exactly.
So
now
sorry.
The studio wants to do. The studio is okay with the taxes, then, right? Fine.
The studio is okay with owning the property.
Good.
Yes.
Well,
here's the thing about that project that's really interesting. It's not just going to be sound stages, which are traditionally monolithic pieces of concrete stuck together to make large vacuous spaces where productions can build sets and large green screens and, you know, make the magic happen. There is also going to be an educational component in their plan where they have students from Queens, Johnson C. Smith, Central Piedmont Community College, and UNCC working on site in their communications educational efforts. So it's like film school, like preparing the next generation to work in the industry. Film and teleproduction is an industry. It produces jobs. It provides income.
Thousands and thousands of jobs.
Yes. And there is also going to, you know, there's talk of putting a CMS magnet school for the communication arts, which is a logical component to have added there also. So whenever there's not a production taking place in the sound stages, students will be able to go into the sound stages and work on their own curriculum in a real first-class setting with real equipment available to them. That is hardly anything that happens. I mean, you go to a film school like at USC or UNCC, chances are you'll be working with obsolete equipment. And then whenever you graduate from school and get into the industry, you've got to relearn the kind of equipment that is being used today.
Absolutely. Well, you know, this is so, you know, I don't know who I can sue for this, but that was my idea. I did that at Northwest School of the Arts starting in 1963. I created the only media literacy curriculum, and I taught it for 9.5 years. I also taught it at Johnson C. Smith. Matter of fact, I got the first students, exchange students, from Johnson C. Smith from their communication class to come over and get the theory for them to learn television and radio. And I had my students that were bright go over to Johnson C. Smith to get the hands-on equipment that we didn't have. And
right.
It did that for 5 years because I taught media literacy from critical listening, critical thinking, and critical viewing in 93. And this is what you need to have because the students get all this teaching about the equipment, but they don't get the theory of why and how. They get on the studio component side. So setting up classes is unbelievably great. And the first thing they need to do is teach critical listening before they teach critical viewing or critical thinking. Because it's a three-stool process. You got to be able to listen. Then you got to be able to think. And you got to be able to visualize. Then you have to be able to think to put it all together. So I taught the first semester, critical listening by listening to old-time radio.
Here's the question.
So
sure.
With this development, why don't y'all, I know that you had an open process and people came and bid and whatnot, but why not now go out and seek a renewed interested party, like a huge studio, like, you know, Disney or somebody, to come in work on this project, like to step in and say, hey, we have a property, we'll partner with you, you know, and see if you could get your studio to invest in.
Well, let me just say this, that whenever the news broke last year that we were considering purchasing the property for this purpose, there were inquiries from all over the world about the prospects of how they might participate and get in the action on this property. But at the end of the day, all those names and all those contact and all that contact information was collected, and they all got the notification of the RFQ, the request for qualifications that went out. And so, like I said, only 7 actually took the effort to respond.
Right.
So they all, everyone had the same opportunity to ring in on this, and I'm talking about major operations in Louisiana, California, especially Southern California, Hollywood, in Arizona, even had interest from England and had a meeting with a group from England. But there is, you know, when it comes down to, okay, here's the RFQ, let's hear what you want to do and how you're going to do it. There were only 7 groups that responded.
I guess they all wanted to do the same thing. They didn't want to pay the taxes. They didn't want to buy it.
They wanted it to be given for them and the city to fund a fourth or a half of their of their investment.
Yeah, well, we saw that with the
well, it's like when they brought Google and all these other places. They took away for years and everything.
You know, the thing is that
are you there?
Can you hear us? Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear us? Hello? We can hear you.
Hello?
Hello? I can hear you. You can't hear us? For some reason, he cannot hear us. Let's put him a hold mute and let us bring him back and see what happens then. Hello?
Hello, there you are.
I don't know. For some reason, the Skype just let us go. Yeah, I had a hiccup. But anyway, the thing is that we have a lot of major films here. I mean, Homeland is made here. I mean, the Hunger Games is made here. North Carolina it was running in the late 90s, second and third for the movie industry, next to Hollywood. New York.
Well, it actually goes back earlier than that. Because, it was really in the 80s, and they were third in production. There were 15 to 16 feature films or TV movies of the week. Remember those? Being made in North Carolina every year. And then in the late 80s, Canada offered a film production incentive package.
Right.
And within a year, all the production that we had in North Carolina was going north of the border.
Yeah.
Along with the production that was in Mexico and in Michigan. So,
right. Well, you know, X-Files was made right on the border.
Right.
Scully and Mola were going, it was Seattle right on the border of, I forgot what that is over there. But anyway, the thing is that I think this is a fabulous idea. And definitely this gives jobs. And see, people don't understand. Oh, besides the movie actor, you have the person that shoots the film. You have the assistant photographer. You got the technician, the sound technician, the video technician, all the grips. There are thousands and thousands and thousands of jobs that are related with this.
Well, think about this also, Michael. The ancillary, indirect impact on the economy that production has. For instance, I was at a forum that the Charlotte Film Community, which is the organization, the umbrella group for all the people who work in the industry from Charlotte, are members of, but they have about 2,000 members here in the city. They had a forum last month at the Uptown campus of UNCC, and in part of their panel was Mr. Paris, who owns H&S Lumber.
Okay.
Mr. Paris shared with the group that day the story of his company, which is one of the larger private lumber companies around in the region for sure, and that after the recession in 2008, he was on the ropes, and in 2009 was considering shutting down the business.
Right.
And then Hunger Games came along.
Right.
And he says, we put about 1 million miles worth of 2x4s on that project, which completely reinvigorated his business. He hired 3 new people to handle that portion of the business. And today, he says, that film and television production in Charlotte amounts for 25% of his business.
Dude.
So he's not directly involved in the industry, but he is certainly one of those ancillary, indirect benefactors from having that business here. Yeah.
And then you also have all the eateries. Then these people got to eat. You got the hotel business. They got to sleep. I mean,
part of the Studio Charlotte plan. They had a letter in their proposal from a hotel organization who said they were considering building a small hotel there to accommodate those transient. A film like Hunger Games is going to come in. The director's not going to be from here. The producer's not going to be from Charlotte. Chances are the cinematographer's not going to be from Charlotte.
Correct.
But we have one of the best cinematographers in the industry who is a Charlotte resident and a director of commercials and film that I have worked with over the years, Mr. Bob Newcomb. He's currently shooting. He's one of the cinematographers who shoots Hunger Games. I mean, not Hunger Games, but Homeland. So he's tied onto that show right away. But, you know, we do have a great, talented crew base. But we also saw that what Hunger Games did, it demanded that people had to come in from around the region. We had people from Savannah, Columbia, Wilmington, working in Charlotte for the Hunger Games. Some of those folks stayed in Charlotte. Some of those folks left and followed the next project.
Yeah, wasn't there a director or an AP that moved from California here? It was a woman. I was reading this about a year ago. She moved. She was an assistant. She was an AD, assistant director, and she moved from California here and she worked on Hunger Games, and she's now working on Homeland. And
that's very likely. Very likely. That's not an unusual story at all.
Absolutely.
Because if you've ever lived in Los Angeles, and I have, there are much more better ways to improve your quality of life than spending 4 or 5 hours a day on the freeway.
Right. Absolutely.
Hey, living in L.A. will make you appreciate the heck out of Independence Boulevard.
Well,
it certainly will. Well, one of the producer for Banshee was also in the forum, and he talked about things like how many different types of location were available to a production in Charlotte within an hour of the city in either direction. He made a joke about the standard answer for anybody who asks, how long is it going to take me to get there, is 15
right.
minutes.
and anybody hasn't seen Banshee, it is a fabulous show. But it's rated MFNPABABCDEFG. So if your cat is watching, send him into another room. Because it is fabulous, but it is, I have to watch it at 2 o'clock in the morning because my wife doesn't even like hearing what's going on.
Right. Well, let me share this about the Eastland property, okay?
Yeah, okay.
What the council approved was to give staff up to 6 months to engage in an exclusive conversation with Studio Charlotte Development to determine a couple of things. First, is their financing model viable? And are they going to be able to pull it off?
Right.
What is going to be their ask of the city, if any? They've said they're not going to ask anything of the city, but we want to be sure of that.
Yeah. Heard that story before.
Yeah. Are they going to meet the objectives and goals that the city has put forth for that redevelopment? What are the risks associated with this project, and how can we mitigate those?
Mm-hmm.
So, we're just going to take our time and do due diligence, have a memorandum of understanding between the two parties, the city and Studio Charlotte Development, so that they can come in and feel secure to share with us, put their cards on the table, quit holding them next to their chest, put their cards on the table so everybody can fully understand how this is going to go off, and then what is their timeline for accomplishing this. So it's not a done deal. But we are asking for staff to come back with a framework for creating the public-private partnership with Studio Charlotte Development for the redevelopment of that property.
Well, I think that's a fabulous idea. But before I let you go, tell us, what are some? Give us two major things that you would like to see when reelected.
Well, I'd like to have a deal with Eason, that's for sure. I'd like to see the capital improvement program start to redevelop improve the streetscape along Monroe Road between Briar Creek and Sharon Amity. That's part of the CIP project that we approved this spring. And hopefully that would be an incentive and a catalyst for some of that commercial property on Independence that's not going to be able to make it to redirect themselves and reorient themselves over to Monroe Road. I'd also like to see the Silver Oaks apartment redevelopment turning into Meridian. That would be a mixed-use development down there. That's on Monroe Road between Idlewild and Conference. That would be a big plus.
You're talking about how much money difference between them?
Mixed use. I'm talking about housing.
Mm-hmm.
And commercial development, all in the same development. So coffee shop, florist, dry cleaner, barber shop on the ground floor, multifamily housing upstairs.
Okay. And
that's the major. You know, that's in broad strokes. Of course, it's a little more. You're getting into the weeds with it. You see a little more definition about what it is. But that's the. You know, in speaking in broad terms, that's what we're talking about. Mixed use.
And before you go, how can someone, if they want to, get out there and help you? We got, because vote is September the 10th, is that correct? At all the voting
That's correct.
Places?
Right,
and
early
we have a
voting.
Last thing, which is today and tomorrow, right?
Early voting will end today at 7, and then tomorrow it will be from 10 a.m. till 1 p.m. at the Conference Road Library, the Independence Regional Library on Conference Drive. That ends tomorrow at 1, and then the primary is September the 10th. If anybody's interested in helping out with the campaign, I'd love to hear from you. You can reach the campaign at info@johnautry.net, and that's johnautry.net. We still have positions available for people to work polls on Tuesday, and we'd love to hear from you if you're interested in helping out with the campaign. We don't have a general election in District 5 this year, so the determination of who will be representing District 5 for the next 2 years will be on Tuesday.
Right. Is there a phone number that someone can call you to get some information?
Sure.
What's the number?
Sure. You can reach me at my home office phone, and that's 704-537-2735.
All right. I want to thank you. We want to repeat it one more time.
704-537-2735. And someone will get back to you with and plug you into the campaign. Look, this is my first term on council. I was elected in November 2011, sworn in December of that year. So I've been in office 20 months. It's been a great experience, a wonderful opportunity. One of the proudest moments was having council unanimously vote to purchase the Eastland property. That was something that no one else had been able to do in a long, long time and many, many attempts. So there's still a lot of work to be done here for East Charlotte. And it's my hope that the voters will give me the opportunity to continue to serve them in this capacity.
You have done a great job, and that has been Mr. John Autry on the City Council. He is running in District 5. Thank you, John.
Thank you, Michael, and guys, have a great day, okay?
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
John Autry, he has done a great job as a District 5 rep. He has helped the people next door to me. I know it for a fact. So get out and vote. You got today. You got tomorrow only from 10 to 1, and then you have Tuesday. And why the hell have you waited to Tuesday? I have no idea. I have no idea. Let's hear what Colbert says.
Tonight's Smile File, Ariel Castro. Now, folks, you might be saying, Stephen, Ariel Castro is a vile monster whose suicide this week is just the dark end to a dark life. How can anything associated with that man possibly make me smile? That's what I thought. Until I tuned into Fox News' The Five, starring Eric Bolling, who always sees the glasses half full. Ariel Castro, the pedophile piece of you-know-what who held three girls captive in Cleveland for a decade, was convicted and sentenced to life plus 1,000 years behind bars. Last night, the coward hung himself far short of 1,000 years. He served 33 days, to be exact. Think about that, folks. Think about how many taxpayer dollars we saved. Here's the map on the whiteboard. Okay, first of all, Ariel Castro, 53 years old, life expectancy of 79 years old, 30 grand a year to house him in a federal penitentiary, 780,000 taxpayer dollars we saved by him hanging himself. That's a good point. No, that's a good point. Justice is expensive. I mean, imagine how much we could have saved if we never caught him. And folks, the Bowling Sunshine Express did not end at Castro and a playful cartoon of the noose. No. Bowling had a way to save America even more money. How about Gitmo? $903,000 per year per Gitmo detainee. That's $150 million a year we would save in Gitmo if they all just think about doing the same thing. Thank you. I mean, would it kill those Gitmo detainees to kill themselves? For Pete's sake, what are they waiting for? Charges?
Charges. Yeah, well, they're waiting to get charged.
Hey, you know, speaking of losers.
Yeah.
I mean, Casper. You know, thank God, whatever. You know he wouldn't last. I mean, anytime one of those guys.
Who's by himself?
You remember Mr. Flesh Eater when he got
prison?
He didn't last but a few days either.
A minute.
The population doesn't want absolute losers in there. But anyway, so whether he killed himself or not, you knew that was coming. But speaking of losers that should be in prison, but
yes.
I just wanted to say, how about that week George Zimmerman's having?
And we'll be right with you, caller, in a minute. George Zimmerman. I was going to get to that.
The double whammy.
I could get to that. Absolutely. George Zimmerman.
Is his wife divorced?
Oh, I've just read that in the paper today. She's in $90,000 in debt.
Yeah. Well, more than that, she has to wake up every morning and roll up and go, you know, she just can't handle it anymore.
And she can't wear that hoodie he bought her for Christmas.
She said that he's a self-absorbed asshole. I mean, really? You just now?
You think?
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, this is the guy who thinks that the entire trial was, you know, a shame because it should have been more about him, you know. Anyway, but the part that cracked me up was the side story that's been going on. See, people forget, just a while back, he was arrested in Texas.
That's right.
Right?
Well, he was arrested here, too.
He just got arrested again.
That's right.
Right, but here's the thing, and I'm reading this right off Facebook. One of these people that posted on the comments because, okay, he's not only just speeding everywhere, he's got, you know, double, he's, you know, losing points left and right on that license. But okay, this is a guy he rides around with guns in his car because he's
afraid
of dark people.
I'd be afraid too.
Yeah, I mean, he should be. But here's the thing, this guy, and I'll give it James Smith. We'll give him credit to this. He said something pretty funny that I like. He just said, hey, let's be blunt. Good thing he's not black.
It's right.
If a black guy got stopped speeding
with guns in the car.
He's already been accused of killing somebody.
Forget it.
Guns in the car. He said not only would he have been stopped, he'd be like, they would have either killed the shit out of him.
Okay.
And that's the thing. Losers are losers.
Hello, caller. Who's this?
Hi, Michael. It's Matt Newton.
It's Matt Newton. You know what? See, if he had Matt Newton as his lawyer, there would never have been a trial because he would have got him off right there. But, you know,
Zimmerman
is self-absorbed. I mean, he wanted to have a trial. See, that's the problem. Matt, how are you doing?
Wonderful, wonderful. Just winding down after a day in court.
I hate to break into your winding down, but what the hell is going on with the CRB?
We're at a standstill, and we're waiting for the task force that was assembled by the city to come back with their own recommendations as to how, if at all, the city should potentially redraft and change this our citizens review board.
Okay, now I have a question for you. You might not have the answer for it. This waiting to receive these results from this so-called council that's looking at this, which is all bull. What happens when they say, you know what? I think everything is great. We don't need to change nothing. What happens then?
Well, at that point, they haven't listened to the recommendations over the 3 to 4 month period that have been suggested by numerous citizens groups and citizens themselves, not to mention acquiesced by the police department. They can do that, but I think that hopefully the community understands that in so doing, our voices have been muted.
And the only way to then take care of this is at the ballot box. Is that correct?
Yes, yes, absolutely. Primary is the primaries are on Tuesday. Early voting is occurring as we speak. I would encourage everybody to, when you go and you cast your ballot, to please look into what your representative or the candidates are all about. Vote for good Democrats, but also be certain that you know who you're voting for.
Know who you're voting for and know what you're supposed to get. Is that
mm-hmm.
the story?
Yeah. Yes, and it, just like we say with what the Citizens Review Board does, and when we talk about transparency of the board, it's about accountability. You want to know what a candidate's all about. You're going to want to also know what they're doing if and when they win election, so that you can hold them accountable if they're not delivering on the promises they make today.
Well, let me ask you a question. In New York City, way back when, in the ancient New York City days, when I was back there, all these shootings prompted the federal government to get involved. And I think they
mm-hmm.
were instrumental in help setting up a citizen review board. Are we at that point here in Charlotte?
I don't think so. Fayetteville has explored the possibility, and they're currently working. It's my understanding they're working with the FBI on creating a system for their town. Now, having said that, there have been suggestions of contacting the Department of Justice. At the current time, we're hoping that we can work within the process of our city government to effectuate the change that we feel is necessary and has been long overdue. At the same time, we hope that committee members who are currently considering this issue listen to all sides and really take a critical eye towards anything they're told. And do the background research to ensure that they know the credibility of the source and the legitimacy of the information they're reviewing.
Mm-hmm. So now, how many of the present city council members have voted with the intention of improving the citizen review board like you want?
At this point, there hasn't been a specific vote on any recommended changes. The vote thus far has been whether or not to
have a vote.
To obtain more information. I'm of the opinion. Michael, sorry.
How much more information do you need? Another body?
Yeah. I was just about to say, I'm of the opinion they have enough information right now in front of them, and they have more than enough to go to the city attorney's office. However, the bigger question and the bigger issue here, I think, is whether or not there is going to be a necessity for state involvement. And certainly, I'm of the opinion the state has already spoken loud and clear. However, we are stuck in a stage where committee members have heard the voice of the community. They have received reports from numerous organizations, and yet they still want more. And we will have to wait to see when enough's enough, because there will be another meeting in later on this month, and for all we know, this gets delayed out into early next year, if not, you know, next summer.
In your opinion, what is the problem that the council fears will happen if they do what the people want?
I don't know. I in my opinion, I think that we operate our city council in a lot of respects operates under a specter of fear of, you know, the tyrant state government coming in and usurping our authority. And I think it's counterproductive for doing what's best for the community and the people that live here and our representatives represent. Having said that, we aren't even at that stage as of yet. I hope that this isn't an instance of stalling an issue for the sake of the campaign season. I've always been of the opinion that despite campaigns, when you have been enlisted to or implored to do a specific job, it's still your job and you still have duties to carry out. But having said that, I'm purely speculating there. I'm of the opinion that we have come an awfully long way within the parameters initially set up by Mayor Fox and consented to by the council at that time. We are well beyond the time frame of those parameters, and now we're still waiting.
Well, go ahead.
I was just going to ask. I mean, even though I kind of can't resist the pull of the government coming, kicking my door in and pulling my gun out of my hand, this kind of fear-mongering that's going on. But do you think that something like this is simply not any kind of actual dragging the feet conspiracy, anything else going on other than the fact that governments and police innately just would rather, you know, keep the door closed and not have any kind of, you know, sunlight and transparency going on? Just by their nature, not like it's something that's nefarious. It's just that they really don't like oversight, you know, because that just is antithesis of authority.
Sure, I've heard the argument that police and police officers have an extremely difficult job, and I don't think that we're overshadowing that or we're trying to make that job more difficult, but to be clear here, I think our stance is that we're trying to work in a collaborative effort with the police department to ensure that there are no questions whatsoever pertaining to our ability to trust the actions of the police and also, let's face it, also trust what they will do, right? Not just what potentially has been done, and so I think we have made an extremely concerted effort to avoid that context, and we still attempt to do that, or we're still attempting to do that as well, because that's been one of the major challenges. Having said that, at the same time, certainly there are folks that believe that strengthening the CRB. Isn't the right thing to do, and for whatever number of reasons, and we've run up against some of that resistance. There's absolutely no doubt about it. Having said that, I don't think that by saying we have a stronger citizens review board, that doesn't mean that we are weakening the police. If anything, at the end of the day, what we're doing is we're strengthening everybody, and that's what accountability is all about, isn't it? It's the idea that you have stronger ties amongst the different players, as it were, within a community.
Well, you're absolutely correct. This only helps and strengthens police actions. I was watching it was Zimmerman. A motorcycle cop pulled him over for speeding. And the camera is on his, I don't know where it was, must have been his lapel or on his shoulder or something. I don't know. You know, like what was it? Alien. No, that was the way he came down and he looked at you and focused. Yeah. Anyway, but hey, it showed everything he did. I mean, so, you know.
That's just a protection.
This is a protection for him and the person that they're talking to. So there's just no way that I think that the more of this doesn't help the civilians and the police department, and it makes the police department more trusted.
Exactly. That's the thing that always blows my mind.
Right.
Regardless of the reasons behind this, whenever you close the door,
right,
you breed suspicion.
Right, absolutely.
Even if you're on the up and up, even if everything's perfect.
Well, we can look at this right now with the president wanting to bomb Syria. Nobody trusts the intelligence because the criminal element, Bush administration and Cheney, bashed it so bad. You can't. Oh, you see, you lied to us.
See, that's our credibility shot. Right.
The credibility is gone within our own country.
Well, see, that's why you need things like this, exactly.
Absolutely.
Every time there's something like the Rodney King type thing, it destroys credibility.
And it's like I always tell my daughter, you know, hey, come on. Little boy to cry wolf, knock on the door. The wolf is going to kill me. Oh, just hurry up and get him. Open the door, and he's laughing. The next time, he's out, forget it. They don't rush to the door until they see the blood coming under the door. I mean, so we're in this position right now with the Syria stuff because of that RoboCop Dick Cheney and the rest of the clowns that were there before us. But, Matt, I want to thank you for giving us an update on that. And how can people get in touch with you if they want to add their own ideas and help you get things out? How can they get a hold of you?
Everyone can jump online and look at our website, crbreform.com. We have a wonderful report. The first 13 pages, I think, have done a phenomenal job of not just in a very condensed fashion explaining the issue, but also explaining the recommendations and solutions to any potential problems. And that can be found on the website. You can also contact us through the website. If you go to the contact link, that will take you to a page that emails our tech guy directly. You can also, if you want to contact me directly, you can contact me at Newton, N-E-W-T-O-N, Arroyo, A-R-R-O-Y-O, Law, at yahoo.com. Once again, Newton Arroyo Law at yahoo.com. I think a very important point to make is no agency should have anything to hide. And
that's right.
Having said that, for business, because let's face it, at the end of the day, they're ultimately accountable to people. And so there should be open door policies. And that being the case, there should be no issue whatsoever in strengthening a board that simply is placed or put in place to speak for the people and call for accountability and transparency if necessary. So having said that, I think that we're all on the same page. It's just going to take a little bit longer than we had all anticipated and hoped. But, yeah, crbreform.com. You can also go on Facebook, CRB Reform Now.
Well, I want to thank you, Matt, and say hello to your partner. And we are very lucky. We should be living in England where they got 522,000 cameras. How lucky we are. I want to thank you, Matt.
Thank you, Michael. I really appreciate it.
Okay. Yes, sir. We could be living in England. How lucky.
When the news is all bad, when you're sour and blue, when you start to get mad, you should do what I do. Tell yourself how lucky you are. When the fates are unkind, when your life's going wrong, when you're limping along and get kicked from behind, tell yourself how lucky you are. Why decry a cloudy sky, an empty purse, a crazy universe? My philosophy is simply things could be worse. So be happy you're here, think of life as a thrill. And if worse comes to worse, as we all know it will, thank your lucky star, you've gotten this far. And tell yourself, how lucky you are.
Yes. Yes, it's that time. The doctor is in the house. Yes, the doctor is in the house. Doctor, how are you?
Oh, I am just fine, thank you, considering, you know, the fact that our we're just seeing just more and more sick people, more and more people with no money and no food stamps being denied to them. It's just sad. It's just so sad. But that has nothing to do with Washington. That has to do with Raleigh. Okay,
right.
So what I am seeing as far as the increase and the uptick in sick patients and patients with no insurance and the patients that cannot afford their medicine has nothing to do, I want to make that very clear, has nothing to do with Obamacare. It has everything to do with Raleigh and Raleigh refusing to take assistance from the federal government. So that I want to make very, very clear.
I mean, the daggone state of Arizona with that moron down there, she's taking it.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, these guys, they want this state to go back down to the very bottom of the well with no light.
They do. They will be the happiest people in the world. I am convinced of it. I used to try to give them the benefit of the doubt, but I don't anymore because I am absolutely convinced that what these guys are, they will not be happy, Michael. They will not be happy until the rich are so rich that they already live in an absolute ivory tower, but they will not be happy until the poor people are working as slave labor for them. I am just convinced of it. And then what they can say is, well, gosh, look, we created a job. We created jobs. Yeah, really? But they only pay like $5 an hour. I'm convinced of that. I'm convinced that all they want to do is get us all to the point where we are providing slave labor for them. And then they can, through their, you know, supposed good graces, say, oh, dear, you're sick. Well, let's take care of you. I'll send, you know, I will come down and do my good works, you know, like they did in the old days, right? I will do my good works for you, and I'll give you an aspirin.
The good old days that they would like to return to, the really good old days, that was called feudalism, you know, where the lords sit on high and because that's evil, but they have serfs.
That's right.
They pay them a pittance.
If
you do something for the lord or catch the lord's eye in some way, he'll bring his, you know, boon down upon you. His gifts will rain down upon you, and maybe you could rise up through the minor levels of some little aristocracy and become a little duke or something. But yeah, that's I think what they want to return to.
I do. I really do think they want to return to that. They will not be happy until that happens. They want what happened in Texas to happen here.
Oh, well, absolutely.
But
they're even taking it in Texas. Rick Perry's now taking it.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, what are we kidding?
Well, that's because, you know, now that they have to check the roads up and turn them back into gravel, there's a lot of injuries from gravel flying up, hitting people in the eye while they drive down.
Wait, but here's what, listen to what these people are saying.
Just to know what you can do, you and your fellow non-communist colleagues in the lower house, what you can do to stop these communist tyrannical executive orders laid down by this foreign-born American-hating communist despot. What can you do for it?
Wow.
I mean, we were just talking, when we first started the show today, we were talking about, you know, if Obama is a Kenyan and not an American citizen, And he was sworn in by the Chief Justice three times to be president. How can they impeach someone that's not a citizen and never was president?
I mean, it's kind of circular logic here.
I mean, it's a logic. You can't. Hey, if he's president, he got to be president. The Chief Justice has to go to jail because he committed a federal, not a state.
He does.
Crime.
Yeah.
He's got to go to jail.
Yeah. And you know, I met a Tea Partier the other day who said he was, he very proudly announced that he was definitely a birth thing, and he claimed that the birth certificate was all wrong. You know, there were blatant errors on the birth certificate that President Obama produced. And I said, you know, isn't that odd that you are the only person that could see these blatant errors? And that the CIA and the NSA and all these other people with all the other initials behind their name, they couldn't see it? Doesn't that just, don't you even stop and think about how crazy that is? You know?
Well,
they don't think about that. The operative word.
Yeah. Well, did you hear, let me let you hear what Chris Matthews said about this guy, Congressman Yoho from Florida.
So you accept the fact he was a born American?
I'm not. No comment.
No comment? In other words, you question the president's legitimacy.
I disappointed you, didn't I?
Well, I'm just at, no, you, I don't know what you, I've never met you, sir, so I don't know what disappointment would mean in this case, but you just surprised me when you say, after saying you support the president, you oppose the president, now you say he's legitimate, then you say, but I don't think he's really necessarily a native-born American, a national-born American.
No, I didn't say that. I just said no comment. What you said.
What does that mean?
I said that. What I would like to say is I haven't studied it enough to spend the time on it to come back with an intelligent answer, so I will not respond, and I'd rather get back to
when do you intend to find
that,
out? When do you intend to find out whether the president is legitimate? When would you put time into that discovery?
Let's get Syria taken care of, and let's get our debt taken care of, and then you and I can have a one-on-one, and I'd be happy to talk to you.
Well, are you a birther then?
I'm not going to comment on that, Chris. We came here to talk about
Syria.
Okay,
fine. I appreciate you've stated your position well. Thank you very much for coming on, Congressman. I mean it. Thank you for coming
on
and expressing your views. Thank you. Gene Robinson, you never know what you're going to hear here, do you? Anyway, thank you. What happens in 2013?
So, I mean, if he is not the president, how the hell could these people be talking about impeaching him? You can't impeach someone that's not even a citizen. What are we talking about here?
But again, they always play this game where they didn't. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the game. You know, I believe it. I'm going to stand up here and they railed against the president and called him names and all this. But then if you ask me point blank, I'm not going to admit it. I'm going to lie. And that's the thing, what we were talking about earlier. You remember with Robbie Wells and stuff. At least when you ask him something or call him out on a point he's made, he'll stand up and say,
right.
Yeah, I said that, and I'll say this more, you know.
Right.
And I get so tired of these crazies who, you know, they won't even own they're crazy. They'll just sit there and imply things. And you know, every time a horribly racist cartoon comes out or a new comment or something is done at one of their conventions and it makes the news, then suddenly they don't know who did it and they don't know how it got in there and they don't know why that speaker was there. And, you know, nobody – I didn't know when I showed up that it was the KKK annual convention. I thought it was corn dogs. You know, they just make up crap. It's pathetic.
Well, tell us about – how, Chairman, how the Affordable Care Act is now working or starting to work really in this country?
Well, it's starting to work really well in those in actually all of the 50 states. I mean, one example is that the premiums are actually dropping. I mean, I know that what the Republicans have been saying is that, oh, beware, your premiums are going to go up. And insurance agents have been scaring the bejesus out of people by saying your insurance premium is going to go up and it's because of Obamacare. Well, actually, no. if the insurance premium is going up, it's not because of Obamacare. It's because that particular insurance company still wants to make money and scalp you. So it has nothing to do with Obamacare. In point of fact, what is happening is that many people are receiving rebates on their insurance because of the mandate in Obamacare that says that they must provide 75% to 80% of what every dollar that they receive in premium must go towards the actual care of the patient. And if they don't provide that, they must give a reimbursement.
Well, what a horrible un-American thing.
That's right. Let me let you hear what former Governor Granholm said about this.
I think that's exactly right. The study that you're referring to comes from the Kaiser Family Foundation, which is a totally nonpartisan group that is the go-to place for facts. And what they said today in this great report, which evaluated 17 states and the District of Columbia, is that the costs for individuals for Obamacare are going to be significantly less than even the Congressional Budget Office predicted.
And this
Why?
Is the Kaiser Foundation, a nonpartisan group.
Right, right. And the reason why is because there's competition. So the Republicans who claim to be capitalists and pro-competition, that's exactly what this particular plan does, is causes groups to bid against one another. And so, for example, in New York, what this Kaiser Foundation found is that if you're a single person who's 40 years old, your cost for health care, once the tax credits kick in it because of Obamacare, is about $111 per month. It would have been well over $300 per month. It's going to be significantly cheaper for people.
Now, that's what Jennifer Granholm said when she was guesting on Reverend Al's show the other day. Now, I want to read you something that I received in the mail. I just received this in the mail. I didn't even open it up because I pay for my daughter's health insurance, my youngest daughter's health insurance. I had this sitting at the insurance company. It sat for a week. This says important information about health care reform and your health insurance coverage. It says 3 years ago, the Affordable Care Act was signed into law. As a result, significant changes will take effect 2014, and we want you to know how they will affect you. Oh, my God, there it is. They're going to cut everything out, right? In the next sentence, they say the good news is you can keep your current health plan without changes to your benefits or coverage because your plan is grandfathered. This means it was in effect on or before March 23rd, 2010, when ACH, the Affordable Care Act, was signed into law. Grandfathered plans are not subject to most ACA requirements.
So even with the changes in the horrible communist law, it doesn't affect people.
Oh, it's a terrible communist law,
And now, there was another letter in here. And it says, dear my daughter's name, it says, this letter is to inform you that you will receive a refund of a portion of your health insurance premiums. This refund is required by the Affordable Care Act law.
Hey, I wish you would quit calling it the Affordable Care Act.
Oh, Obamacare.
That sounds like
you. You need to call it Obamacare.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Obamacare.
This horrible socialist Obamacare plot to take over everyone's health care in the United States because President Obama has nothing better to do with his time than to take care, get into everybody else's business.
Now,
does that mean, by the way, that we're all now under Kenyan?
Yes, we're under Kenyan law now.
Okay,
yes,
that's all. Sure.
Right. Now, the Obamacare requires this insurance company and all insurance companies to issue a refund to you if the insurance company does not spend at least 80% of the premiums it receives on healthcare services such as doctors, hospital bills, and activities to improve healthcare qualities, such as efforts to improve patient safety. No more than 20% of the premiums may be spent on administrative costs such as salaries, sales, advertising. This requirement is referred to as the medical loss ratio standard, or the 80-20 rule. And because of the 80-20 rule, please accept this check for $99.32.
Awesome. You can buy me lunch next time we meet.
I have the check in my own liberal stained hand. Pigeon liberal stained hand. So do I need to say any more about these lying fools that are out in this country?
Oh, listen, absolutely, right? What else? This is why they want to defund Obamacare, because they know that once it really takes hold, it will be so popular, that these fools will be laughed out of Congress. That's why they want to do it.
And you know what I did?
When you get the old saying, the check is in the mail.
The check.
It literally.
And I didn't open this up. Let's see. What date is this? I didn't open this check up. It was laying on my desk. Since 7-11, I've had this and didn't open up this envelope.
Well, that's strange.
That's unbelievable.
This is the letter. And it's signed by the president and CEO of the company. So every year.
Is it tear stain?
Yes.
You know, you probably cost him an extra yacht.
Oh, yeah, probably did.
I mean, if you had to give $9.
Darn. Look at you. Yeah. You're a heartless person here now, Michael. Heartless.
Well,
you know, with that 20.
This is my search pay.
Yeah, but you know, with that 20-80 ratio, they can't, by law, spend more money on executive.
That's right. They can't. So everything. So every, you know, I'd like to post this check, which I am going to do, online, and send it to every single Republican that I know.
Yes.
Send it to McCrory. Send it to his boss, the governor, Art Pope. And send it to all Tillis. It needs to go out to them.
Well, I think you should do, you should one up that. I think you ought to send a letter along with a copy of the check to every single regional small newspaper in North Carolina. Because I got to tell you, the people who live in a small town don't get it yet. They don't get it because they listen to Fox News, and that is what they believe. It's Fox News.
I mean, it's just completely, it's reckless.
Well, it is.
And we were talking earlier, Mike,
they would rather do. They would rather this country fail than them to have any form of success
and,
in any way.
Absolutely. And
they would literally rather their people starve, their parents go without medical care, and our ratings go down in flames as the rest of the world just defaults on every loan we've ever had and kicks us in the teeth, because that to them is more beneficial. And
so
given Obama any,
as he said, see, they had some other stuff. No, that was it. He says, if you need more information, if you have any questions about the medical loss ratio and your health insurance coverage, please contact us at the phone number. And, you know, it says here, it says here that if the insurance company did not meet the medical loss ratio standard of 80-20 and 212, the company should spend it told me how much they spent on the premium. This company spent only 76.9% of your total of $22,896.02 and 61 cents. Now, that's probably everybody in this insurance company's that they have on board in premium dollars on health care and activities to improve health care quality. Since it missed that target in your state by 3.1% of the premiums it received, this company must refund 3.1% of your health care insurance premiums. We are required to provide this refund to you by August 1st, 2013, or apply this rebate to your premium that is due on after August 1st, 2013. Your rebate check is enclosed. Now, I mean, how much more, what, and I can't be the only one that that received this.
Yeah, nationwide, man.
And this is nationwide.
But
what is the next step going to be that these regressive Stalinists can say? Don't believe your lying eyes?
But that is exactly why they are so frantic right now, and they're trying to even go to the brink of complete destruction by collapsing our economy and stopping the government itself shut down because this is all kicking in now. You know, the original deal.
And it's not, this ain't 214 yet.
No, but the original deal
right.
was that they phased it in.
Right.
That they could, not have all these effects immediately.
Right.
Or else, it would have been a cakewalk for Obama all these years. But anyway, so it's been phasing in. But now that they're really seriously kicking in and the checks are in the mail to people, they know.
That's
the
right.
clock is running out. And so this is why they're at the desperate point of, literally,
right.
you've got these Tea Partiers running up saying, we'll shut down the government rather than allow this to continue,
right.
which is
yeah.
allow them
yeah.
to help people.
We were talking to Robbie Wells, earlier in the show, and he says, he was, and I have, I'm iffy about the Syrian attack, but my thing was, he was telling me what he would do if he was president, and I said, Robbie, what would you do if you had the same Congress and you were president? Nothing you wanted would get done. I said, the only reason why. He said, forget about Syria. Syria is not important. We can bomb them all day. The problem is here, because he mentioned that we need to support jobs here. We need to get this. But that's not the president to get jobs.
We need, we need all of those things. Listen, we need all of those things. However, you hit the nail right on the head. Even if it was something that Barack Obama could wave a magic wand and say, okay, I am going to create X, Y, Z number of jobs tomorrow, it still has to pass through Congress. And this is
Absolutely.
The biggest bunch of do-nothing people I've ever met in my whole entire life. It ain't going to pass. It ain't going to fly.
They did do something. They voted to allow Obamacare.
Did you find Obamacare 40 times? Yeah, well, hey, let's just waste some more taxpayer money.
That if we had, when this president came into office, if these troglodytes would have passed a back to work jobs bill to fix our bridges and our schools and our tunnels and our infrastructure, our roads, we would not be in this position. We would be down probably to 3.2% unemployment.
We would already, yep. We would be doing this show.
Yes.
On the high-speed rail
right.
to New York City.
That's correct.
And we'd be finished before we
arrive
there before we finish the show.
Right. So the thing is that don't you feel that if this is the problem, because they don't like this man because he's black, period.
And he's smart.
And
he's smart. He's very smart.
Oh, very smart. So I think.
See, and that's more proof why they couldn't educate people.
That's right.
Right there.
Because you get these people start running wild when they're educated.
Yeah.
So the thing is now, my whole thing was that I have to think about with the Syrian and you as a war vet, I am leaning towards him doing this, but I can't say, I can't use the excuse, well, you know, we got 50 million people unemployed, this, that. That has nothing to do with us going to war. That is the daggone regressive party's job in the House to make sure we are not in that position.
Look, they didn't care about that joblessness in the United States when they were beating that drum to go into Iraq.
Absolutely.
Okay? They didn't give a rat's behind about what was happening in the U.S. of A. to the poor people, to the underprivileged. They didn't care about that then. Why all of a sudden now they got they're climbing on this darn high horse like they really care? They don't care. Because look at the policies they're passing. Look at the policies that they're instituting. Look at their policies. There's not one thing that they have passed that will, A, create a job, or B, make life better for the underprivileged and the underserved in the United States. Not one. So they have some nerve to get up on that daggum high horse and talk about, oh, let's take care of the 40X million or 50 million people that are... No, uh-uh. You lost that right, buddy. You lost that right to be able to say that you care about poor people when you beat the drum to get us into an unfounded war in Iraq. Absolutely. Mm-mm.
Well, you know, the thing is now, here, I mean, even our junior governor here, McCrory, asked them not to override his bill that he wanted because...
Well, you're talking about punishing the poor.
Punishing the poor?
They're going to make people that are so poor that the welfare... mandatory drug test and
fingerprints. And pay for it.
I mean, it's something that's failed in state after state.
Yeah, well, that's what McCrory said. That's right.
And yet, another thing of criminalizing
poor people. Right.
Yeah.
Well,
if you're poor, you're obviously a drug addict.
Absolutely.
A criminal.
You don't want to work. They did this with that clown down there in Florida. They never caught one person. And they had to finally drop it because it was costing too much money. That's why they want now the people here to pay for it. And if you don't get it, you don't get the job.
And you watch. The firm that is going to be in charge of these drug screens will be somehow linked to one of these darn Republicans. Yep, just like Rick Scott's wife owned that company that was doing the drug screening. Yeah, you watch. Absolutely.
Unbelievable.
Well, you know, if they outright, you know, work for the company, you can rest assured if you look into it, that half of these GOP, when they knew they were voting on the bill, they've gone and invested in these companies, you know, bought stocks in them all because they know they're going to make bank.
Well, the thing is, I don't know, how could the poor people pay for getting a drug screening fingerprint if they're poor?
That's right. Well, because they all live in mansions, don't you know? They all live in mansions. Yeah, every last one of them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they all have Mercedes Benz.
Well, yeah, you forgot
that little thing. You forgot that. You're the welfare queens of the Ronald Reagan era.
Yeah, that reminds
you forgot
me of
that one, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Shame on you.
The bottom of the Mercedes, the top one.
Yeah.
But it reminds me of the old Abbott Costello routine. I loved Abbott Costello. And I was watching it one time. Costello was walking by, and this guy was out there and says, brother, can you spare a dime for me? He says, oh, man. And Costello had his last 10 cents in his pocket. He says, boy, you look bad. He said, he gave me 10 cents. And he says, thanks, buddy. He walked over and put it in his parking meter that he had his Cadillac in front of. This is what they think this is.
Yeah.
Exactly. This is what they think it is.
Michael?
Yes, ma'am.
I need to run. I need
okay.
to go.
It's
been a pleasure.
How is everybody? How is Mr. Galloway?
Everybody he's wonderful. He's absolutely wonderful. We had lunch today with Mr. John Falkenberry of the USO, getting the whole 50th of the Vietnam Veterans, the Vietnam War commemoration going. We have to talk about that one day.
Well, what is that for?
Well, we're currently in the phase one, which is the preparation phase. But the 50th will start in 2015. And right now, we want to make it into a very hometown-centric kind of a situation. So we don't want just the big celebrations in New York and Washington and stuff like that. We want the small towns to be involved. So we've got Concord involved. We've got Mount Pleasant and Midland. We've got Dobbin Heights, Antonio Blues town, Hamlet. Reaching the small towns, we want to get them all involved. So I think that's something that we need to talk about on your show.
Every time you're on the air, because we got to make the people get in tune with this. And you're all these Vietnam veterans.
And also,
because we have to thank the Vietnam veterans and give them the welcome home that they never received.
Absolutely. I want to thank you, Dr. Grace.
Thank you.
And we will see you. Yes, sir.
I mean, you know much more than the average bear.
Than the average bear, yes.
People forget, Vietnam, victim-wise, it was a...
Over 50,000 people killed.
Well, it was a horrific situation. Again, it was one of those undeclared wars. It was a dirty war. It was all,
the top 10 resolution.
And everything. The whole thing was the CIA.
The top 10 resolution. Yeah.
But the thing is, at the time, there was legitimate horror and anger about it. Because every night on the news, you're watching the little children.
But why wasn't it ever declared a war? This is a problem.
A lot of people have problems with all of these ginned up CIA, big wars that we have, and that's why they say that.
Well, the CIA didn't gin up that Iraqi war. That was the vice president and his company that did that.
Well, anyway,
CIA said no. CIA said no.
Industrial complex. Makes money. But again, that was the problem. So that when these poor vets came home, everybody was just so sick of it that we had all the horrors of sitting on beds and not having clothes and things of this nature.
I'm lucky I didn't ever happen to me.
Well, it's a real problem. And even worse, I think, is the failure of our country officially to step up and have corrected the problem. And, one of my big angers, my uncle was a Marine medic over there. And he, got blown to hell and back and everything. But, Reagan, under his wisdom, when they abolished all the psychological care in America, a lot of that was the vets that were dealing with all the horrors of war. And they threw them in the street.
Yep.
And that's when we had this, magical homeless problem that started in the 1980s. They just popped up out of the ground.
Right.
Well, I think we need to rectify that. And one of the most egregious errors that people forget, in today's world, people volunteer for the Army. You go on choice. If you're over in Afghanistan and having a bad time and all that, well, part of that is your problem.
That's right. It's your problem. You shouldn't have went there.
Now, you have to do what get assigned to do once you're in there, but you chose to join.
You chose to join.
Back then, y'all didn't choose to join. You didn't just say, hey, you know what? I can't stand getting an education. I'd rather go over there and sit in the jungle and get shot.
And get shot at. That's right.
That's what people forget, is that that was not only a non-war, kind of dirty war thing that was going on, but it also, those people that were sent there had no choice. They were forced to go. And so to now mistreat them in any way, it's just, it's double damnation. It's really, really bad.
We have now on, is this Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir. How you doing?
We have now have Randy Bola, Chairman of the Democratic Party in the great state. Well, I hope it's going to be the great state of North Carolina again. But the way it's going right now,
the limping,
it is going down the tubes. What the hell are these people going to do next by fingerprinting and making people take drug tests to get welfare when it didn't work in every other state that has tried it? And it's been about five or seven of them.
Well, first off, I'd like to say this still is the great state of North Carolina. And just because, you know, we've had a philosophical change by a few radical folks that have, or extremists in there, we're still a great state. They're trying their darndest, though, to besmirch our reputation. But two things to say about that. One, North Carolina has always taken a long time historically to adopt what other states are doing. So we're kind of at the end on where other states have been here. And you're correct. It hasn't worked. And it shouldn't even be a program that we should be instituting. And if we are we requiring legislators to take drug tests in order for them to legislate?
Yeah. You think?
Right. And also, that if you want to catch the drug dealers, you need to have a ball of Wall Street, the mandatory drug test.
I mean, this is completely insulting because it essentially is trying to, you know, follow that old Reagan idea of the, you know, the welfare queen, the one that, you know, yes, there are some examples of people abusing the system, but nothing has been more abusive than the destructive policies that happened after Glass-Steagall was eliminated and we would not regulate derivatives. That's cost the country trillions, and that's the true problem. The financial sector went from 15% of our GDP to over 41%. There's the problem right there.
You believe that. But,
we don't make anything.
Well, true. But here's a example of I don't want to say it's ironic. It's just pathetic. But at the one hand, while they're criminalizing the poor and saying, you know, they're obviously criminals, they're poor, let's drug test them, let's do everything else about it, they just changed the law and exempted all the businesses from E-Verify.
Right.
Right.
That's what they don't even stand by their own principles. Again, here they are. They run on anti-immigration, anti-everything, and yet they're the ones that just, you know, as even McCrory said, they just passed a jobs bill for illegal aliens. I mean,
what the hell? Is this unbelievable? Is this really unbelievable? I mean, and then we have the governor. Pope, our Pope, he has these businesses that are 80%, maybe 90% in minority poor communities. So now he's going to drug test all the people who are coming into his store, just probably about 80% of them, and they can't get money. So isn't it going to cost him? I mean,
this is actually an interesting point you make, because it's proven that wherever Walmart goes, their wages are so low that a good chunk of their workforce has to actually get benefits that end up being supplied through the counties but are coming from the state and the federal government. So I guess theoretically they could be backdoor drug testing these employees and eliminating their workforce. I mean, it's odd.
Absolutely. Well, you know, you're absolutely right. You know, what does what is being said up there by the legislature? I know you have your ear to the ground up there. What's being said about the shenanigans that's going on constantly?
You said being said nationally, or
statewide? Well, what's being said statewide? Because I know you have your ear to the ground up there. What's being statewide about all these shenanigans? I mean, is everybody saying, has this place gone crazy?
I think that slowly but surely people are waking up to the fact that their lives are being affected in a deleterious fashion. I mean, look, you know, a hospital closes, and now people realize, hey, McCrory and the legislature didn't want to take the money. People told them this would happen. Boom, jobs are lost. Rural hospital closes. When this happens, we need to speak up and loudly say, see, there's a cause and there's an effect. You know, there it is. People are losing, they're losing their benefits, they're losing hope, they're losing jobs, and, you know, McCrory is kind of whistling past the graveyard.
Yeah, but McCrory really is running the state. I mean, we know it's Art Pope.
Here's the question I've got about McCrory.
Yeah.
Is he just, you know, this ineffectual tool, but he's kind of doing his own thing and blah, 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 blah? Or is he just literally going along with him, but he's smart enough, if you will, to use his tools to give himself a little shine because he knew they were going to override this? You know, is he just playing the game and vetoing it, or does he really have any kind of substantial difference with these yahoos?
Well, some people have actually speculated that it was a setup and that he was trying to show some difference, even though he knew that he was going to get overridden. You know, my question is, why didn't he actually veto some of the bills that actually really were important, or there was a massive amount of public protest about? I mean, he picked
like
a couple of these.
Right.
Well, yes, the voter bill being one, and the issue on abortion that came through the motorcycle safety bill. There's a whole list of bills we could say that he could have vetoed and drawn a line in the sand. All the local control issues, for instance. Where's McCrory been there? He was a mayor.
Right. Absolutely.
What is he saying about the airport?
Well, what he's saying is that he wants to take it away. That's what he's saying. But the problem is, you never heard him say that when he was the mayor down here. But, you know, of course, he really was just a figurehead because the Democratic-controlled council and commission did everything for Charlotte. All he did was smile.
And then go back to the gigantic tower that
right.
built downtown where his bosses were.
Yeah, absolutely, a Duke power. So what is going on up there that we need to know, Mr. Chairman, that's going on that the people need to know? The early vote is still going on. And what else?
I mean, we're working on, of course, we had at least a victory for Montrevious King. I mean, everyone worked on that. I spoke to the young man when I was at the SEC meeting and told him that we would get behind him. Senator Don Davis had put me on the phone with him. I talked to him a couple of days ago after the ruling. I mean, we're just going to have to keep pushing back on every front. But, I mean, I'm going to key you in what I think something everyone should pay attention to. So last week, you guys had a delegation of your Republican and Democrats to a town hall from the legislature in Mecklenburg, correct? And it was
correct.
Written about the Charlotte Observer. I think it was on the 28th of August. So I thought it was interesting that Senator Tart claimed that everybody was, you know, he said, well, you know, we have certain disagreements, but we're all friends. And I thought, you know, that's odd because my friends don't cut off my right to vote. My friends don't try to seize my assets. You know, my friends don't try to pollute my water. I don't understand what his definition of friendship is. But then when you further got into it, you know, Ruco is making statements about the airport, and there's a bunch of things that I question. Something that you should pay real attention to is this. Senate Bill 207. It's one of these innocuous bills that they, you know, reconfigured what the local government commission could do or not do. But it allows them now to take over water and sewer systems if they don't meet certain requirements that are run by cities and towns. And it allows them to dispose of the assets, meaning privatize them. And so when on one hand the North Carolina Rural Center was completely gutted on the basis of, you know, yes, they had a few problems, but you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, and it was the best source of low-interest loans or grant money for municipalities to use to repair water and sewer systems, for instance. And now you dry that up, and then you put in this law. I'm telling you right now, there's going to be a backdoor privatization of publicly owned assets, which is another way of subverting democracy and creating an oligarchy. Now, you're asking me, I wrote a letter about this to Senator Round. You have to put all these pieces together. It's right in front of our eyes. Mm-hmm. And RUCO is part of this.
Did you send that letter out? Because I don't know if I saw that letter yet.
I'll send it to you. You email me, I'll send it to you. Basically, I'm laying out for you that they changed the rules. The local government commission is an appointed commission that works through the treasurer's office, okay? Typically, it's people who believe in government, and it's a kind of a populist-created enterprise going back to the 1930s when we're trying to ensure that towns and cities don't go bankrupt operating their water and sewer systems and that they use best management and good business practices. But they've changed the law so that now it's easier to take control of a water or sewer system, and they can actually dispose of the asset. You realize that's undemocratic. They're going to create monopolies, so companies like Aqua America theoretically could own half the water sewer systems. Now, I'm not making a position statement on whether they should or should not. I'm saying this is subverting democracy. People elect their elected officials to run these systems, and you don't have choice if they go into private hands without a vote by the local people to do it.
Well, this is a long standing practice of the Republicans. They've done this for years.
They're doing it to all those big cities.
They also did it to great success all across the third world, most notably in South America, where they, Peru, Chile, and Bolivia, where they tried to privatize, and Paraguay too, they tried to privatize all of the water everywhere, all the natural resources, besides oil.
But the Nazis didn't want them to do that down there.
Well, I mean, no, but it's they do this over and over. They go in. What they do is what I call pirate capitalism, but there's all kind of different terms for it. But you go in, and instead of building anything, you take existing structures and organizations and you know, functional things, and you simply dismantle them all and extract all the wealth from them.
And then just
that's what, you know, the Bushes were great at. That's
well,
what
that's what they did in Detroit. That's what they're doing in Detroit.
That's exactly the
same thing.
They're going to take all the public assets away. In this case, they're going to be taking public utility assets away from local communities.
So and that is
also, I'm guaranteeing you this, you know, you remember the governor got in trouble when he first went in trying to dissolve all those oversight agencies and boards and everything. Well, I guarantee you it's going to be connected to their because it's coming like a nightmare, all the fracking that's going to be coming on, because they're going to be affecting everyone's water. But if they can also take over those commissions,
they don't make a difference.
Then it will be less oversight and less action taken.
Correct. There will be less oversight. And, of course, the forced pooling concept allows people in hydraulic fracturing to take control of the underground asset whether you wanted it or not. And you could end up having your water affected. So the long and the short of it is they're running an ideological program, and Democrats and unaffiliates need to wake up and say, hey, enough is enough.
And I mean, you know what I found out? I found out, let me say this. I found my next door neighbor has a big house and the lawn. I guess I have more yardage space, so I use water a lot, and my bills average. And this year I didn't have to use that much because we had a lot of rain. So it's been averaging like $100 a month. Okay. Now, but it was normally last year and the year before that, it was because with the dry spells, it was sometimes $125, $135, $145 me watering. Because, I mean, it didn't have any rain, so I had to constantly water. Now, my next door neighbor, he put in a huge pool. It's 40 by 20. And what he did was he put in a separate sewer meter So not his water that he uses to fill up his pool is it's not affected. It doesn't go in his bill because he has a separate sewer, a separate line in. So I was saying, well, gee, everybody that has a large lawn, they could do the same thing. But it costs like $600, $700 to have the separate line put in, meter put in. So they got you coming and going. But the thing is,
it's because of the way water and sewer systems are set up, and they bill based on sewer usage. So if you don't actually, if you're not connected to municipal sewer, you're going to pay just for your water. But really, the best way of doing it is to have purple pipe, which they've started doing around the state, where you use tertiary treated water from the sewer plant to water your grass, which is practically drinking water. That actually is more environmentally sound, and it's much cheaper, I mean, by a large factor.
Well, how can people get this done?
How can what?
How can we get this done? How can I get it done?
Your water and sewer authority has to actually be putting them in. So the town of Cary started doing that years ago because, you know, the water shortages in the Triangle when we had the drought situation. And the town of Pittsboro, where I've been the mayor for four terms, when we upgraded our wastewater treatment plant, we went toward producing tertiary treated water, and we put in a line, and I sent it down to 3M Corporation, so we don't sell them potable water. We're selling them tertiary treated water, you know, essentially gray water, reuse water, which is more environmentally sound and conscious. I mean, ultimately, water is where all the battles are going to be, and that's exactly why they're trying to set up to privatize this. It's not going to be about oil. It's going to be about water.
Right.
Water
is the
access resource. And if you frack and ruin all the water, then the supply is suddenly going to be a question. So it won't matter that you have cheap gas if you don't have any water.
That's right.
I mean,
well,
nobody's kind of really discussing this.
Well, wasn't that the main theme of the film Chinatown? It was all about water.
Yes.
It was all about water.
It was all California and all about the water. You know, here's something to remember when you think about the Middle East, for instance. I saw a study years ago that when you factor in an industrial society, the amount of gallons of water per capita you need is about 250,000 per capita. You know, for everything, you know, counting everything, all the inputs in society, that's what you need available. In the Middle East, they have about 80,000 gallons per person, which is, of course, you know, why there's so much friction and why the Israelis do drip irrigation and so forth and so on. In America, how many gallons per person of water, fresh water, do you think we actually have available? Take a guess.
I don't know, a couple of billion?
We have over 5 million gallons per person available because we have the Great Lakes and all these other sources.
Right.
So the greatest source of wealth in our country is our drinking water. If we ruin our drinking water, we have essentially destroyed our greatest wealth. That's our biggest advantage over the rest of the world.
Well,
that's also why, I mean, people don't pay attention to it, but all during, you know, even back during the Bush years, the Pentagon and everything else, you know, their strategies are shifted, and they said all the future war is water wars. It's not going to be any kind of resource wars. And people, you know, they were already trying to get into that gear because they've got the Himalayas are melting, and all those rivers are going to run dry in about 20 years. And then they're going to have Asian, you know, displacement of populations and everything else looking for water. So that is the future commodity.
That's it.
That's why you
don't need to be fracking, and if you are going to allow fracking, you have to be very careful.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Go
ahead.
So I don't mean to get you, to be a downer on a Friday, but you asked some questions. You didn't ask me about Syria, though.
No, I don't, because you know, it's not going to be downer because I'm going to have a drink soon to finish there. So,
yeah,
but
get me all riled up.
We're going to talk about Syria next week because the president is going to make a major address to the nation Tuesday night. So
right.
I want to get your figures on that And every time we talk to you, it is like a light has been turned on. And
well, thank you. You're very kind.
We haven't had that in the chairman since Moses was a baby.
I want to tell you one thing to think about. You know, what, yes. Regardless of the decision made on Syria, it occurred to me the other night that when Union Carbide had their major leak in 1984, I believe, in Bhopal, or 85, okay. You know, 2,500 plus died, and I had to go look it up. And if you go Google, you'll find out the Indian government has much larger figures on that. And I thought, well, we didn't go bomb the corporation. We didn't, you know.
Right.
And then I looked up the definition of what a chemical weapon was, and I said, it's remarkable that a chemical weapon sounds very similar to what happened to Union Carbide. And so it just got me thinking, okay? That's all.
Well, now, don't be feeling that way. Now, and we already got another minute, but I would tell you, I'm floating back and forth on this whole serious thing, and I'm going to talk about it if I have enough time. But the thing is that, hey, we started this long, long time ago to be the nation that everybody goes to when something happens. We did
That's true.
A long time ago, and we can't take our eyes off the ball here. People try to say, oh, we can't go there because look at all where we are in this country. We don't have work. We don't have jobs. You know that. Well, that's because of the Democratic Party, the Republican Party, hates this president. They've had 40 bills that they've tried to put through, and they've all failed. Instead of getting jobs for bridges and schools and tunnels and roads where they could have employed millions of people, and we could have had a 4% unemployment rate or lower. So don't try to say that. That doesn't count. You know, the Republican Party is the one why we're in this condition. Because this war, we would have sent the president would have this president. I'm thinking would not have thought twice without sending missiles over there. But because of the condition that these Republicans, and it's one of the things I need to ask you. We were talking about this before, and this is a question you can think about. If he's a Kenyan, and he is president of the United States, sworn in 3 times by the Chief Justice. How can you impeach him if he's not a citizen?
Don't use logic on Republicans.
I don't understand that.
That's unfortunately a logic problem. I mean, these birthers never give it up. They still, you know, run around with these birth certificates, you know, trying to wave that around. And the irony is, though, that there are other people, you know. John McCain wasn't born in the United States. His father was
right.
And grandfather were both admirals. I mean, he wasn't born in the United States.
That's
he was born in Panama, I believe. I said,
that's right.
I don't know. I mean, they keep trying to come up with these crazy conspiracies and they send these, you know, internet memes around, you know.
Right.
Look, I could go all the way back to when the Afghanistan thing started. I wrote a piece and I said, this is the Fantasia problem. And you remember Fantasia, you know, when the apprentice, Mickey Mouse, that's what I call George Bush, the apprentice.
Yeah.
He comes in and he doesn't know how to actually do the magic. And he tries to animate the broomsticks. And every time they break, they make more. And I said, you go over there, you're going to make more people that want to come back at you because it wasn't handled properly. That's
right.
All the way back to the beginning. And I was pretty right on that.
We've got to go, Mr. Chairman. We've got to go. We've just got our signal. We need to talk about this big deal.
We will
Friday.
Talk next Friday,
Michael. Okay. I'll talk to you.
I appreciate it. You take it easy. Bye-bye.
No problem. Bye-bye.
When
the news is all bad, we're going to go out with a smile. How lucky you are.
Tell yourself how lucky you are. When the fates are unkind, when your life's going wrong, when you're limping along and get kicked from behind, tell yourself how lucky you are. Why do you cry? A cloudy sky, an empty purse, a crazy
crazy universe. My philosophy is simply things could be worse. So be happy you're here. Think of life as a thrill. And if worse comes to worst, as we all know it will, thank your lucky star you got this far. And tell yourself how lucky you are. How lucky, how lucky, how lucky, how lucky, how lucky, how lucky, how lucky you are.